It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when we podcast again.
Remember that in Fast and Furious?
No. What?
The one where Paul Walker dies.
Oh, no, I've never seen
it. And so it's the only Fast and Furious movie I've seen.
You've seen the first one?
No, I haven't seen any of them. Where it ends with Vinny D is in his car and he's driving along next to Paul Walker in his car.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like smiling at each other with the windows down and like, yeah.
I think I've seen the gif.
Yeah. And then they come to a fork in the road, which is interesting for all you cinema majors out there. We'll know that it represents both. Though it is a literal fork in the road, it represents a metaphorical narrative fork in the road. And Vinny D goes one way and Polly W goes the other way. And that's them like saying goodbye. And I feel like that song for our final episode.
You cracked it.
Well,
this is our next project.
Fast.
What a ham Fast and Furious.
Where we break down the semiotics of the Fast and Furious.
But just that scene.
It's just over and
over. We're going to do that for 5 years, every 2 weeks.
Well, I was thinking our version of it, it's like that. That's where we're like going our separate ways for the end of this podcast. But instead of two cars, it's like a motorbike and a sidecar. And as we approach...
You're just going to release
Listener, put this in your mind's eye. We come to the... It's a motorbike and a sidecar. We come to the fork in the road. Lift up a latch and they split off. Wait, did you think you were in the sidecar?
I thought I was in the sidecar.
Aww. Okay, it's two sidecars stuck together. No motorbike, just two sidecars.
Going down a very long hill.
And it's been a long day without you, my friend. And I tell you all about it when we podcast again. Latch lifts. You go right. I go left. Off into the sunset.
Wait. Yeah. This is a political podcast.
Your point.
Have you just said that I'm going right and you're going left? Is that...
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh, I don't know. We can talk about the future later on. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to be talking to you every fortnight.
Is it because I'm wearing
this?
Black and skulls?
It's for a lot of things.
And everything's red. Yeah. Is it because of my opinions?
Yeah, maybe. But final last one.
It's weird. It feels weird.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
But we're in person. We survived.
Hercules is here. He'll start snoring soon.
And this, I guess, it's taken the place of like our usual end of year kind of Christmassy specials, but it's not, but it is. But because it's somewhat, I thought for the final time, I would do what I usually do for these episodes. Give you a gift.
At the start.
This is what I usually do in the cold open. On these Christmas episodes, or end of year episodes, I always give you a gift.
We did gift at the end last year.
Did we?
Yeah.
Whatever. none of this matters. I don't care. So you're sitting on one of the gifts currently from previous years.
Great lumbar support in my chair.
Yeah, the Lord of the Rings Elvish What on Politics cushion.
Something just occurred to me. I was looking at the other gift that you gave me at the live show, the signed photograph of Michael D. Higgins.
Yes!
Signed by Michael D. Higgins, which I've now accepted. But I took so much longer to accept that was Michael D. Higgins in Irish writing to me than it did that this says What on Politics in Elvish. Yeah, I was like, oh yeah, of course it does. Whereas
for so long you didn't believe me that Michael D. Higgins was a real signed...
No.
Yeah, I mean, why would you? I've like trolled you at every given opportunity with these gifts. But yeah, no, that's... Do you remember as well being... We're just going to be doing this a lot with memory lane and shit, but at Electric Picnic, I think it was actually Picnic, the live show where I gave you that one, but then like going to... The 2FM or Today FM,
yeah. Songs of Praise.
Yeah. And then just dancing and then whipping out that picture and then everyone like dancing to this picture of Michael D. Higgins.
There are not many political figures, active political figures, where you can whip out their photo and people go, ew.
Yeah, it just unifies people through and dance and song.
There were two elder fellas beside us. Probably like, they looked like us in 10 years pretty much.
Could have been. We don't know how things are going.
Yeah, time travelers. Who knows? And then they go, what is it? And one of them goes, oh, it's a picture of Michael D. Higgins. And the guy goes, all right.
I can't understand how you could be so apathetic towards...
He wasn't apathetic. No, he understood.
Right, okay. But he didn't...
But didn't join.
He didn't join in the dance.
No.
Anyway. God, 5 years, huh? Anyway, here. So let me reach into my bag and pull out And don't be turned off by the fact that I have it wrapped in socks. So it's currently wrapped up in a sock. That was protected from the beer I was carrying with me in the bag as I was taking the train to your house to record this.
Mm-hmm.
But here it is.
It's wrapped up in paper.
It's wrapped up in paper. Take that. Open it. And because this is an audio medium, you're going to have to use your painted word picture for the good folks at home. So
Richie has driven me to a crossroads. He's nodding to me wistfully and sagely.
Oh shit, sorry.
It starts. It's a little wooden box.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was upside down first, and I was like, what the fuck is that? It's a question mark.
But it's
the exact same question mark that is on my arm.
Yeah, it's the question mark insignia. It's the one I gave the tattoo artist. He did a different one, I think, but it's the original design I gave him.
Yeah. I prefer this one.
I prefer the one that's not tattooed on our bodies forever, if I'm being perfectly honest.
I was like, oh no, did I like expand it?
No.
By expanding?
No.
Okay, but it's a box that can open.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to pull it down. And inside is... A wooden USB stick.
It is a little wooden USB stick. And on that is everything we've ever made and done over 5 years.
Holy crap.
Every episode, every piece of artwork, every photograph, all of the bonus episodes we did for Head Stuff Plus, all the weird feed drops like Podibition, anything we've done that I could find, that I could track down, has been put onto that. Those are the official WAP scrolls, the What Am Politics scrolls, that'll exist forevermore. Although I would recommend you do a backup because I don't think it's a particularly good USB stick. It looks nice because it's wood and everything, but I don't, from when I was using it, it was a bit iffy, so maybe make a backup. But
it wasn't made in China, was it? Because we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, I have no idea where it was made.
Wow.
Carved in Vauxhall in London, laser cut. What are politics? Question mark insignia. And you very astutely notice that's the same design as your tattoo. Push it up against your tattoo and see what happens. Push the wooden box against your tattoo. Put the two question marks together.
Oh.
Nothing. It's a wooden box, you idiot.
It feels really heavy, even though it's not. Like, I feel a weight. I feel a weight to this, even though it's only like light wood and a flimsy Chinese USB stick. But yeah.
You're feeling all of the memories.
I am. Mm. This is really nice.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's time for me to give you your present.
Oh, no!
So I put a lot of thought into this.
Yeah.
And I think I found the right thing. So there will be another gift later, but for now...
Oh my god, two gifts.
Two gifts. Well, three actually.
Three.
You know the West Wing?
Yes.
Here you go. Take it. You gotta take it. What is it?
It is a piece of kitchen paper.
I couldn't find the napkin.
Towel. Basically a napkin. A la the West Wing. What did the one on the West Wing say?
Bartlett for America.
Bartlett for America, that they slapped up on the board.
And then that inspired the whole thing.
Inspired the, yeah. This one says, Richie knows politics.
It's the end. It's over. We've done it. You've done it.
I've learned everything.
You've learned, you know it all.
I'm gonna fucking keep this forever. It's getting framed.
I wanted to get it framed, but then it occurred to me that I've already given you like at least one frame thing, and you're a man that doesn't really want much stuff around the place.
I'm a
so
minimalist.
I thought it can be.
Oh, I'll keep. No, this is not many things pass my bar for shit I keep forever.
Well, now I regret this not giving you a smaller one. I should have gotten it up.
No, oh, this is perfect. I have to put this away from me because I will like burp again and wipe my mouth, and I will reach for the first thing. So
I checked to see if there's any like stains on the original or anything like that I could recreate. I couldn't see it, but no. I didn't look that hard.
No, it's you were looking at a standard definition copy.
Yes. Well, like it's an old TV show.
Yeah, exactly.
It's such an old TV show that you can only get it on DVD.
Oh.
And we're going to talk about the invasion of Taiwan later and the possible disruption of the internet. So whenever Netflix shuts down, at least you'll have a TV show to watch.
Oh my god! It is the box set of the West Wing! Steve!
You've watched it already.
I've watched it like twice through already.
Oh shit, I thought you only watched it once. Okay, well, I've watched it four times, so you can probably keep watching it.
I need to get it. This is the homework that goes on after. Yeah. You know when you graduate and you leave school and the professor sits you down and goes, here's
everything else.
Here's everything else.
The West Wing is the reason that you thought to ask me to do this in the first place. The West Wing is the reason I got interested in practical politics.
Yeah.
Because we were just talking earlier about your sister who works in film and all that, and you were like talking about how the industry works, and it was sparking memories because 10 years ago, that's where I was. Mm. But I was also watching The West Wing, and then the bottom fell out of the Irish economy and work was short. So I was like, maybe I should do what President Bartlett does, quite naively.
Yeah.
But then I did. I went and did a couple of degrees.
Yeah, you did. And that's where we met.
Yeah.
It's like while you were studying.
So yeah, I just thought you should have it on your shelf. And I don't want you to be able to get away from the fact that you are now a political nerd.
Oh no.
So when people look at your, you know, collection of avant-garde movies, Marvel 50th anniversary, Steel edition releases, and the West Wing box set, they'll know that you are a political nerd who rewatches the West Wing every couple of years.
I've got a transparent PNG of the Marvel Studios logo. I will cut it out and put it over the West Wing logo. It says Marvel Studios presents the West Wing.
You can't. I put a gypsy curse on it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You're always doing that.
I know.
Thank you. That's so touching.
You're welcome. I do have another one. I'll give it to you at the end.
Jesus Christ, so many.
I know.
Well, one of them
finally won up to
you. I'm fucking hell, you
one of them is only a bunch of DVDs. The other one's important.
Okay. I would argue that both of these have been important. Okay, I guess for the last time, let's listen to the theme music.
It's been a long day.
I'm actually glad that we went with Plan B for the episode.
What do you mean?
As opposed to Plan A.
What was Plan A?
We just sing the final countdown on repeat for 60 minutes.
Hey, there's still time. Do podcasts have B-sides? this out.
Let me check the wooden thing.
Yeah, turn if you take the USB key out, flip it and turn it the other way. That's the B side.
Keep forcing it in.
And just keep
forcing
really,
it
it's
in.
It's not going to want to go in. You've got to get past that. And eventually, if you push it in, you'll be rewarded with a terrible rendition of the final countdown by Europe, as sung by us. So yeah, we've just heard the theme music. I want to thank Supermarket Love. For that theme music.
For the third and last time.
I said at the start I would always thank him after every, at the end of every episode.
Like it was every third you remembered.
And then I would remember it and I forgot. And then there was
for
a good
4 years.
A good 4 years there, which representing a good 112 episodes or something where I forgot. But I remember now. And I text him and he wished us the best. And
who? He was very sweet. You did what? You're still doing that? where did you get the original theme? Not to detract.
The original theme, which I'll play a little section of now. That was some garbage I found online.
Did we have the rights to it?
It was royalty free from what I remember. I know a lot of podcasts isn't at the time had this kind of chiptune-y 8-bit
yes.
kind of gamey type sound to it. And I quite liked the dopey sound for at the time. We were in the early days. There's a lot of like we used the analogy of like I'm a toddler, like I'm a political toddler, and you're my drinking buddy.
We've used that up until the end.
Yeah, exactly. But and I liked how childish that sounded, and I think we used it for the first 6 episodes or something, and then Hassan, who goes by Supermarket Love for his nom de plume, came up to me and went, really like the show. I think it's fun. I think it's got legs. Your music shit. And he said he came up with an offer to write us. So I just gave him like a few notes. I was like, I'd like it if it was like this. And he was like, grand.
Yeah.
And then he came back like 2 days later with that bop, which we've been using ever since. And he's done variations of it. He did a Christmas one. He did like a mellow ambient one for like our retrospective episodes. He's done.
We'll put them at the end of this one.
Yeah, exactly. Just really, really good dude. He was on our What I'm America episode. Mm.
That was an experience to record for me.
Yeah.
You guys were over in San Francisco in the evening time. I had to wake up at like 3 o'clock in the morning or stay up, one of the two. And then I recorded wrong.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You were
on a laptop.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
Oh, well.
It was a worse laptop back then as well.
Well, that's your excuse.
It was the excuse for the worse audio.
So what are we going to do for our final episode?
We have a few things to touch on. A
few things. There's a couple of things that...
You got one final thing.
One final thing that we didn't cover.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a couple of things that like There's three things I've written down here that we didn't cover. One of them being a suggestion from David Helian.
Helian, big it up. Helian, who we both know from college,
yeah,
has been a very great fan, even though he's been living in Germany the entire time.
Yeah.
And has been our number one Twitter fan by liking every single tweet and post that instantly come out.
That's how I know that we've actually remembered to tweet, is that I see the notification from David Helian. If in my head I go, oh, we didn't get a notification from David Helian that he's liked a tweet, then I'd be like, oh shit, maybe we didn't actually tweet it out. So thank you, David, for that service. But yeah, we have a couple of things that, like, just gaps. We want to just fill in to make sure that we find, because there's three missing things. We know that over the 139 episodes, we've covered everything in the realm of politics except just three things.
Yes.
We'll finish those off, put that bow on the podcast metaphorically, and then, I don't know, we'll just shoot the shit and chat about favorite bits, what we've learned, what the world's like. It's been 5 years. A lot has happened in the world.
A lot has happened.
But outside, inside. When did Fast and Furious 7 come out? Probably in the middle of that. So there's that. We have to get to that. But the first thing I want to talk about was the Overton window. I want to know what am the Overton window.
This is effectively our last what am, because the other two are kind of shoot the shit chats.
Yeah.
Which we've done a lot of episodes based on that, and they're fine and they're good, but this is the last splainer.
The last, like, splainery thing.
So before I answer, why do you think why do you need to know what it is as the last thing? Like, how have you heard about it?
I've heard of it.
Where does it fit in?
I've heard of it mentioned in, like, political analysis on other podcasts, or like anytime I dip a toe into more political minded punditry or whatever, sometimes they'll mention the Overton window and whether a new policy that a politician wants to enact, or something like, whether it falls into the Overton window, or whether it's like, no, that's, this falls out for the modern day outside of the Overton window, so probably won't, blah 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 blah. And it's mentioned a lot in those spaces, but it's never really explained a lot, and I've kind of, through context clues, picked up that it's the general accepted window of what is accepted, politically speaking.
That's pretty much it, yeah.
Right.
Like, even societally, if you want to broaden it out.
So not just what other politicians have their eyes on.
It is a political science term, and it is used in terms of, like, if you remember back to when Donald was talking about the public sphere, where we have our big public discussions about what we base our democracy on and all that shit. This is basically the center ground. The Overton window is the place where people are like, yeah, okay, yeah.
Right.
We can talk about that.
Okay.
As opposed to if you say something that is considered scandalous, outside the pale, and inappropriate and taboo, then that would be outside the Overton window.
Or something that's, like, too progressive.
Sure, but that's what I mean. Like, we should all be communists. It's probably outside the Overton window.
Yeah, which isn't to say certain people have that belief.
Oh, they do. Yeah, people do. Yeah, there are.
But just not enough that, basically, is it safe to say then, if a politician pursues policies that are outside of the Overton windows, it's kind of politically damaging?
It's not even about policies being pursued, and I may be incorrect in this because after me degree and fantastic tutelage from people such as Donal, I look at politics a lot now from the political communication side of things.
Yeah.
So it's even about how people talk about politics rather than the actual specific policies. So it's not that a politician can be a socialist or a Marxist, and there are many of them operating within the Western world. You had Jeremy Corbyn was the leader of one of them, and you had, you know, AOC over in the States, Bernie Sanders, and over here we have Socialist Party. But most of the time, they don't actually talk about socialist policies. They talk about other things that are within the Overton window, because they know that those are the topics that are going to be talked about and picked up upon. Right. Whereas if they try and talk too much outside of that, they're going to be written off as cranks.
Right.
So the Overton window is kind of that gap in the middle that the media and general discourse is willing to tolerate.
Right.
And it shifts.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it.
So this is the other thing. What dictates how it shifts? And is it the type of thing where you could look at it one way, where it's like, does it always shift left when you look back at, like, civil rights issues and stuff like that? Like, is it constantly moving slightly towards the left? I'm thinking of a famous Stephen Colbert quote where he says, reality has a well-documented liberal bias. Because, like, marking things like, you know, enough time goes by and, you know, we do, at least not everywhere in the world, but in the areas that, you know, we're familiar
with. In the last 100 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Is that true, or is that just me, my own bias?
Ironically, you've summed up what the conservatives say is true about the Overton window.
Right.
And, like, extreme conservatives would say that, yes, the Overton window is constantly being pulled to the left. Mm. And what they would like to talk about isn't considered kosher. So they feel that they're outside of it. But funnily,
sounds like a bunch of snowflakes to me.
Funnily enough, the Overton window is most talked about by leftists. And they're using it in reference to extremist populist politicians that come out there and start saying outside the fringe things.
Mm.
And then they're trying to, they try to use the Overton window as an example as to why it's a bad thing that Donald Trump pardons a pedophile or talks about how there were bad people on both sides in terms of like the Nazi marches in Charlottesville and whatever and that kind of stuff. So it has come to the fore because leftists are afraid that the Overton window is being pulled further to the right, because that apparently, theoretically, one of the best ways to shift the Overton window towards your side isn't to, so if you can imagine it being in the middle of the center and you want to pull it to the right, you don't, there's no point in just talking about slightly right, because people will be like, whatever. If you start shouting about things on the very opposite end of the right spectrum and start going blah, 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 whatever, you know, bring back slavery.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Okay, we won't bring back slavery.
But maybe.
But maybe let's.
Yeah. Let's roll back the civil rights.
That's compromise.
I don't buy that myself, though.
Right.
Because I would agree with your previous statement that the course of Western democratic history, at least, seems to trend towards liberalization.
Yeah.
And better rights and less oppression and general progressivism.
Yeah.
Not to say that we should take that for granted, of course.
Yeah, I mean, look at America, there's like rolling back of abortion rights and stuff.
Sure.
Like, instances.
Yeah, we can't take our own history as being the way things are or take for granted that things are. Like, if we look at it, this 150-year blip of Western democracy is an anomaly. Yeah. We're not meant to have all these rights. If you look at history, this is like a needle in the haystack compared to how it's normally. So it's not to say that it might not flip back that way and we might be start losing more rights and going into a more oppressive regime. Who knows?
Sounds like you know something.
I don't know. But I think I simultaneously sympathize with the leftists who talk about the Overton window and the dangers of right-wing politicians trying to shift it with their mad talk.
Mm.
But I also don't buy too much into it.
Right.
And I don't spend too much time worrying about it.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's actually that easy to do it. And the blip might be that we allow fucking idiots so much airtime. Or it might have more to do with the media space and all that. Like that the media structure that we have now incentivizes having nutters on because it gets more attention.
Yeah, 100%.
So that's basically the Overton window. It's kind of like the meh ground of politics. Is it like, that's all right, yeah, we'll talk about that. As opposed to, oh no.
It's the what on politics of fuck. No, we're not mad at all.
But like the things we talk about are safe. We very rarely talk about things outside the veil because we don't want to.
Yeah, I guess.
We talked about socialism. We talked about
universal basic income. And is that outside the pale?
I don't think so. That's a good example, actually.
Yeah.
So like the idea, if 20 years ago you tried to say to the general Irish population that we should just give people loads of money for nothing, which, you know, is a bad example of what it is.
It's a reductive.
No. Whereas now they'd be like, maybe.
Maybe.
Probably not.
Last 2 years have been kind of shit, but maybe something like that could have helped.
Do I have to pay for it?
Okay. Well, thank you for that final explainer. Moving on from that, this was originally going to be a full episode, but I think we're not. You'll see now why it's, you know, Steve and I probably aren't very well qualified for this kind of thing. But in line with the gift you just given me, the box set of West Wing. Yeah, exactly. Have you noticed how there is a gap in the market for the definitive modern political drama?
Okay.
So we had The West Wing.
The sequel to The West Wing.
Yeah, we had The West Wing. There's even like Veep finished up a while ago. Even House of Cards kind of burnt out. But that was like a good modern, like captivating political drama. And I feel like right now there's a gap in the market for two hotshot typewriters like us. We've never written anything, but you know, you got to start somewhere. So why not start with the next great political drama? Can we just take some time to workshop what that could be?
Sure.
I had an idea.
Okay.
And now, I don't know, we've never collaboratively written something. I don't know whether you're going to shut this right down.
Well, we've done the noir thing and all that.
Oh, the Podivision and shit. Yeah, that epic. That cinema redefining thing. So I don't know whether it's, so this is my pitch, right? Because we're in this kind of festive time of the year, Home Alone is going... Stick with me. This process isn't going to work if you're going to laugh at me.
Have you seen White House Down?
Bear with me.
Not
that.
West Wing Home Alone.
Yeah, look. But more, okay? So
more than Jared Butler?
Home Alone is everywhere right now. There's also the Home Alone reboot. But in my mind, they're just rethreading old ground. They were trying to like reboot the universe with new actors. I think it's a bit of a kind of a cop out what they did. What I think they do is they do like a soft reboot, the Hollywood soft reboot, like they did with Halloween and Halloween Kills, where you go back. We're still in the original Kevin McAllister Home Alone universe, right? The same kid who was left at home in Chicago and then left in New York a year later. That same Kevin McAllister. But now, flash forward 30 years or whatever, Kevin, maybe inspired by his multiple run-ins with the Wet Bandits, has pursued a career of maybe wanting to make sure nothing like this ever happens to anyone again, and kind of goes into maybe law enforcement at first, but then works his way into politics because he doesn't like the system, and start working his way up, and then he gets local, state level in America, then national, but then like goes, fuck it, UN, and he's in charge of like world security. He's going to protect the world. The world is his house, you know what I mean? And then aliens. So we get a lot of, because the problem with the Western was it was very America focused. All these dramas are too America focused, and I think there's an appetite for something a little bit more global. How do you feel about, it's like a geopolitical drama where Kevin McAllister is in charge of, let's, I don't know if there is like a position in the UN. He's king of the United Nations, maybe.
Well known position.
And then there's like, maybe it turns out that Home Alone was always in the Independence Day same universe, but you just never, you know, they always were. We just never saw the connective tissue until like later on in this series. It turns out, oh, that was there the whole time. Kevin grew up maybe having seen, because what, Independence Day was 1996, Home Alone was 1992, 93 or something like that.
You're saying that as if like I'll know what I'm about.
So Kevin McAllister lived through that attack, and so maybe that was like part of what motivated him to like protect the world,
right?
Yeah.
So in this movie, all movies,
it's not
are
a movie, it's a series.
All series are the same universe.
Not all of them, just these, so like, two, just the Home Alone,
just
not Home Alone 3, 4, 5 or Home Sweet Home.
We ignore them.
They're not part of the canon. Just Home Alone 1, Home Alone 2 are in the same universe as Independence Day and Independence Day Resurgence. The ill-fated sequel that you and I went to go watch.
Oh yeah.
So we reboot that one again. And this time Kevin McAllister has to defend the whole world with the same type of shenanigans, but also mix in some geopolitical finagling.
Yeah.
And then aliens. What do you think?
So I love it.
Okay.
I mean, it goes without saying.
Right.
Okay. I do have a couple of suggestions.
Don't want to hear, is it? Okay, fine. I'll entertain them.
So we could do that.
Could, okay.
But we could also do First Dog.
Like Air Bud?
Yes.
But he's the president.
Yes.
Oh my God. Is it Air Bud? Like Air Force One to be like Air Bud One.
Air Bud One, yeah.
Would be his plane.
But yeah. And like he just bites them in the bum and stuff.
Okay.
But that could be one of the, like, is this a movie, I think? I think there's going to be a series of movies.
First Dog.
Yeah. It's a movie.
What's the inciting incident that leads to
the dog?
This is the United States.
So if you check the Constitution, and okay, if you check the line of succession,
okay,
it goes.
Hang on. Let me just
take out your copy of the Constitution that you always carry.
What?
You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. So president, vice president, I think it's Speaker of the House. Leader of the Senate. No, actually, yes, no, Secretary of State. Pet of the President.
Oh my God, you're right.
I told you.
It's right here in black and white. Yep.
It's a little known fact about America.
Oh my God. Okay, so there's what we're saying is there's precedent. There's, you know, this could be a real thing. This could be like a gritty.
Yeah.
Minor thing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It's going to be like a, like, I would like Aaron Sorkin to join us to flesh out at least the first couple of episodes and get the ball rolling.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the dog will be, it will start off, he's been president for a while.
Oh, so he's, like, jaded,
no,
maybe.
No, like, a couple of months, maybe.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
Obviously, like, he's got great psychological scars because his owner's not around anymore.
No.
His owner's not around anymore. Wait,
so, what does that make the owner of the president?
Well, no, the president. He's the president now.
Oh, he's emancipated himself from his owner because
his owner is dead. His owner was the president. So,
something had to happen
to those people for the dog to become the president.
Horrific.
Yeah,
what horrific.
Something terrible happened.
Series of events.
And something cat related, no doubt.
Yes, is it later revealed that it was actually intentional? That maybe. Oh shit! It was the cat. The president's cat who instigated this whole thing, thinking
misunderstood the constitution,
yes,
thinking
thought
that
the cat was,
but the cat was actually the wife's cat,
right?
The president's wife's cat.
Okay. Oh my god.
So then the dog president, what's his name? I haven't thought of that.
Jeb Bartlett.
Yes. And so instead of like how he shouts, Mrs. Lanningham, to get the buzzer, he just goes, roof. And the same actress comes in.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. President.
Roof,
roof. You right away, Mr. President.
Launch the nukes.
So that's what I think.
Okay. Well, all right. Here's what I think. Because I love it. You know, this is clearly, you know, a big moneymaker. We do after 9 o'clock, that's when the Home Alone, whatever garbage I said, that's what comes out. That's a post 9 o'clock thing. And yours is more family friendly, maybe, you know, after school. Are you thinking this is going to be like a sexy romp?
Neither sexy nor after school. It's serious political drama. Like, not like, I mean, this will be like network TV drama.
Let's put them both on stream and people can figure it themselves when they want to watch it. Let's do that.
But I mean, in terms of the tone,
right,
it's like The Good Wife tone. It's like West Wing tone.
Right.
Grey's Anatomy. Like, it's not, there's no boobs.
Right.
Because there doesn't need to be. Because the dogs.
No, they don't need it.
No.
This is on Game of Thrones. So we need to sell
it. It's like, oh, some intern is like, Mr. President, can you give me any favors? And she flashes and the dog's like, roof.
You kind of corrupt then, the first
and then
the dog.
And then the other intern goes, oh, you don't know nothing, Mary. Here, Mr. President, have a cookie. And then he's like, oh, that's how I became the Secretary of Defense at the age of 22.
Love it. Love it.
That's
okay.
Right. Yeah, that's my one. I have a secondary idea.
Oh my God. Go for it.
Because I just want this to be made.
Yeah.
I would like a big budget period drama about Charles Stewart Parnell in Westminster.
Okay.
Going through all his rigmarole in, I think it was like the 1880s, 1890s, to try and get home rule for Ireland.
Oh shit.
This is a serious one. I would like this to be made.
Yeah. But like big production values.
Oh, massive. Yeah. Great actors. Everything. You would think that you are in Victorian times. Like Gladstone is there, one of the most famous prime ministers. You got like, and there's like, he was brought down in real life by a sex scandal.
Oh my God.
Be great.
The show will have everything. That's actually, this sounds really good. Fuck whatever we just said. That sounds good.
So we'll do that. And then they'll give us the money to do the other two.
Right. It's that thing like, who is it? What actor said you do? Oh no, it was Nick Cage, I think. Maybe I won't say a quote. But it's like, you do one for you and you do one for them.
Which ones does he do for them?
I don't know. I think they're all just...
Have you seen the...
I'll do whatever.
He's now doing one as himself.
Yeah, well, we mentioned that at our live show at the last Dublin Podcast Festival. It was one of the fake news game things where I said...
I don't remember.
It was like when we used to play this game of, is this story real or is it a fake news story? And Nicolas Cage is going to star in... an action drama called The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, where he plays himself and he gets embroiled in some cartel shenanigans.
I thought you were going to say that it was a fake news story that has now turned out to be true.
No. It was always true.
Oh, okay.
The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. What a fucking great name for a film about Nick Cage just being Nick Cage.
And it looks pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Pedro Pascal. Love him.
So next, before we get down to the introverted pensive stuff.
Mm.
Music.
Music. Yeah.
Political music.
Yeah, so David Helian suggested, David Helian, who we mentioned earlier, number one Twitter validator, mentioned he'd like to see something, us talk about something with music, something musical, something. The intersection of politics and music isn't a particularly rich overlap in the Venn diagram. It's basically Hamilton, and we talked about that.
It probably is. There's probably loads you could talk about.
Well, I was thinking the only thing I feel like I could contribute, that I could suggest, that I could talk about in this sphere is national anthems.
Yeah.
And how I think they're kind of shit across the board. Like, everyone has like a bit of an affinity for their own national anthem, but that's only because you feel like you have to. I feel like all of these countries, every country has such, has vibrant art and music. Like, why can't your national anthem be more of a modern reflection of the country as it currently stands and its values and stuff.
The South African one is.
Is it?
Yeah. I'm actually going to tell you that this was an episode suggestion by Ed Leamy 4 years ago.
Was
I breezed him off. National anthem, Steve.
Yeah. Well,
the Irish one apparently calls the Brits gay.
What?
Yeah. Apparently it's in the Irish language version that we basically accuse them of being homosexuals in a negative way.
Really?
And we still have it.
Did not know that. And if you know, all you lads are all really gay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're actually right. It's there. But I was thinking like every 4 years in time with the Olympics or something like that, everyone gets a rebrand. And you know, you keep maybe the same motifs, the same, there's like a hint of the same melody that always runs throughout, but you update the instrumentation, different artists come in. But I think, sorry, you raised your hand.
What you're saying is our Eurovision songs are our national anthems for the year.
Maybe.
But Worldovision.
A little bit. I think take that, but then there needs to be some lineage. You still need to be able to go back to the original incarnation of the song just to maintain like a consistent identity. But then you update it every 4 years or something like that. It doesn't need to be done every year. But the big thing I'm going to say, and I think this is the game changer, is that everyone agrees, that all the world's countries agree on a key that all these songs have to be composed in. So like it's, you know, G major, or its respective
minor. Can it be a minor key?
It could be a minor. It could be E minor. It could be the respective minor. Because just say then Ireland goes and plays New Zealand in the rugby instead of playing both national anthems or whatever. You would play a mashup of the two, and because they're in the same key, they straight away were, and you just get like, instead of two songs that are just people don't really care about, you get a fresh new song every single time, and it becomes like a cool melding and a cool marriage of the different countries' values and their you know, musical feels and their styles, and it becomes like a bit of like a sexy new taste of what you're about to, I don't know why I got sexual there, but you know what I mean? Like yeah. It becomes like an exciting new thing before you watch a bunch of big handsome men clash into each other.
Yeah, or indeed like ladies hockey or whatever the sport is. Ladies rugby.
Yeah, anything at all.
Big handsome women smashing into each other. Yeah, whatever.
But I think that would be so exciting.
Sure, yeah. I have no strong opinions either way. Go ahead.
What? How are you not so excited by this idea? Fresh mashups.
I don't fully understand all the things you're talking about because I don't know what the
musical
theory.
Someone out there is losing their mind about this.
Oh, yeah. I'd say people that know about music are like, wow, that's great.
David Helian's just rocking the show right now. Yeah. You're welcome, David.
The only thing I can think to talk about political music is that, you know, the song Things Can Only Get Better?
Yeah.
Which it was the theme song for New Labour and Tony Blair.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Brian Cox was the keyboardist on the band.
What? From Succession?
Professor Brian Cox.
Oh, not Brian Cox, the Logan Roy from Succession.
No, he was a well-established jobbing actor by then.
Oh, okay. I don't know. He could have.
He's pretty old.
Yeah, okay, fair. I didn't know that about Brian Cox. That's interesting. All right, there we go. Those are the final three contributions to political analysis and explanations.
You're welcome, world.
We did it. So next we thought we'd just chat a little bit about what we've learned. And I guess less so in terms of this is how I interpreted it, how we discussed this. Less in terms of specifics, because there's 139 episodes back there of all of the specifics that we've learned. But I was thinking more so like general stuff, if you know what I mean. So like the first one that I wanted to talk about was just what I've learned is just how intangible so much of the stuff we talk about is.
That's my fault.
I just want to talk about how confusing and opaque and obscure and contradictory and drunken and slurred all of this stuff.
And it's all got an Irish accent.
And smelly somehow.
Oh,
no. But I mean just, okay, so what I mean can be summed up pretty well by a quote that from you from our very first episode. So I was listening to our first episode on the way here.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, yeah. Just to bring it all full circle. Actually, fuck, we didn't mention it. We are currently recording in the room where our final episode that we're recording right now is being recorded in the exact same room where we recorded the first episode almost 5 years ago to the day. Not exactly to the day, but roughly, give or take.
The only thing that is the same as it was when you came here last is that couch is still there. Everything else is different.
That's where we both sat on that couch. Yeah.
Now Hercules is on it upside down in a sleeping posture.
It's adorable. But yeah, the quote I had, that is literally verbatim. It's all basically made up. There's no hard physics or science to this, really. At the end of the day, it's a made-up system we humans put together. So you're basically just disagreeing on mindsets, not hard facts. And that was like the first bit of insight you ever gave me. And it's very apt because it rang true throughout everything we discussed.
That is because I don't have the strong principles that you need to be very strongly minded and have a strong conviction to do politics practically.
Mm.
So, like a Marxist wouldn't say that.
Wouldn't say
what I
that
said.
This is a made up system.
Well, they kind of would, but yeah. They would also say, oh, yeah, okay, a Marxist probably would say that, but like a libertarian wouldn't say that. They'd say freedom is freedom.
Yeah.
You need to have freedom. Therefore, no, the thing that we need to have is freedom.
Yeah.
Or, you know, socialists would say whatever.
But even the fact that all these people would say different things, it kind of speaks to what you were saying.
Sure.
That it's all mindsets. Humans didn't evolve into this world where there was an intrinsic political system that we evolved from single cell organisms into, and it had to be this way to survive.
If
it's not.
Ugg had been the first president of the cave instead of Bug, then things could have gone very differently.
Can you imagine if Chug got it?
Oh my god. The Overton window, let me tell you.
Chug's Overton window.
It would have been a Velux fucking skylight. Sponsored by Velux.
Chug want to marry Mammoth.
Boy, Mammoth.
Chug was incredibly progressive.
yeah, sure.
God, oh, Chug. But yeah, and it kind of rang through for everything we would talk about. Actually, I also noted then that was the first thing you said, which I found quite insightful and kind of resounded with me through everything we talked about. But then the second thing you said was that Trump was the 46th president.
He was the 45th.
When he was the 45th. So as I was listening and noting down these things, it's like, wow, I can't believe the first thing Steve said is this like perfectly cyclical thing. It links back to like what I wanted to talk about in the final episode. And it was the first thing he ever said. That's so like pure. And then you went on to say, yeah, Trump, I think he's the 46th president. I'm not sure.
There could be something about that, though, because have you heard about the guy who became president twice?
Twice, yeah.
Yeah, and yet there's a little bit of contention, but I can't remember if that's even relevant in this instance.
Is that what you were thinking of at the time when you said 46?
Could have been.
It could have been.
Probably wasn't.
But yeah, I think...
He wasn't president when we recorded that. He only became president afterwards.
True.
He got inaugurated when I was...
He got inaugurated the week after I went back after we recorded that.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, but anyway, the reason that kind of stuck with me, it was because it was like a little bit of a talisman for when stuff got a little too... When I tried to make sense of stuff that, you know, can't make sense of sometimes when you're talking about the hearts and minds and the will of an incredibly diverse group of people all trying to, you know, come together. So sometimes that can be a very challenging thing to wrap your head around, especially... You know, when stakes are pretty high, if there's, you know, you're talking about pandemics or whatever.
When you get exasperated and you're like, how can these idiots not see things the way I very clearly see it?
Exactly. Yeah. And then I just come back around to, look, we're all sacks of meat powered by electricity and imagination, all just shuffling around, trying to do our best. And we're all, you know, formed together to try and do things as best we can. And we all have our own aspirations and morals, and it was always going to be messy. You know, we should kind of expect a certain degree of ambiguity and messiness from that, which isn't to say you should forgive certain bad things, obviously. I just had me sleep a little bit better and process things a little bit better. And I only just realized on the train in here, it was like the first thing you said to me. And it just stuck with me the whole way through.
Good.
So thank you. Was there anything, I've got a few things I've written down, but is there anything that you've learned?
Well, I mean, like, I went a few different ways over the years that we've been doing this. I think when you got in touch with me, I had kind of wanted to give up a bit on politics, like Brexit and Trump getting elected really took the wind out of my sails.
Yeah.
I didn't understand how the world could be that way.
Yeah.
Like it was wrong how I understood it. And I got excited again about politics. And when we got into it, this definitely brought the spark back. And I would say, if anything, I've come to peace with it now.
You've settled a little bit between those two.
Yeah, I kind of went on a bit of a high then for a couple of years. Maybe not for the last 2 or 3 years that we've been doing this. Herc! Herc! Herc, it's okay! Herc! You're okay. Good boy.
Oh,
good boy.
Bad dreams again? The snakes?
Yeah. Trump. I've settled on it to the point where like I find it interesting in the same way that I find Warhammer interesting now.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think I have much of a stake in it anymore.
Right.
I don't think I'm going to be getting involved in practical politics that much.
Okay.
And I don't even think I want to read much of the news anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't feel the need to keep up with all the stuff anymore.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, not looking at the news sites, I don't think I'm missing anything.
Yeah. And is that coming from a place of self-preservation so you don't go back to the your aforementioned kind of disillusionment with Brexit and Trump and stuff? Like, you're like, I don't want to be that invested again so that I become that disenfranchised. So you're just going to take a step back? Or is it just, do you think, a more natural growing older and...
Probably a bit of both. It might have been a subconscious barrier that I put up there to protect myself from getting that bummed out about it again. Yeah, but
following on from that, the next thing I written down, interestingly, you're saying about not following the news. One thing I learned is that when something is happening, like as it is unfolding, is often the worst time to learn about it.
Yeah.
That, and this is coming from getting hooked on the 24-hour news cycle and live updates.
Yeah.
Live updates on news sites were awful thing for my mental health, particularly COVID or anything unfolding, just like that refreshing blog mechanic that BBC and Guardian, every major news outlet has, where the day's events unfolding and they'll just put up a little thing. That's not news. that you know what I mean? I mean, it technically is, but it's not, it's no way, it's incredibly reactive. It's not passed through as much like of a filter. There's no unifying editorialization behind it to make it more beneficial or useful. It's fine if there's some sort of a catastrophe and you need to be kept abreast of a situation as it's evolving and you're maybe caught in the middle of it, but just not good, not a good way of processing information.
Yeah.
I think probably the best way is, and this is the thing, that when people want to learn about something the most is as it's happening because it's top of mind and it feels very present. But realistically, probably the best time to learn about this pandemic will be years after it's over, if it ever ends. You know what I mean? When there's been some analysis and some distance and some objective reasoning behind it, not in the throes of this, which I think for that reason and others, I think I'll also be taking a step away from news once this is done.
The only thing I have left is my Irish Times subscription because I do the crossword every week and I also like supporting them. And The Economist, because I forgot to cancel the auto renew.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think for the news consumption you do have, pay for it. Pay for your journalism.
Yeah, because I think it is important.
Like good, like fun, well-funded journalism is important. It's one of the pillars.
When you mentioned that it's editorialization there, that is often used as a slur.
Yeah.
But incorrectly, I think.
Yeah, well, I think good editorialization.
Well, yeah. Like, we're talking about the ones that we agree with and we disagree with the ones we disagree with.
But responsible, I guess, is maybe the word I should be using.
Sure. Yeah, it is. Like there's two versions of the news. Well, there used to be two versions of the news. It's a tabloid, which just want to sell papers and will hype things to the max just to sell them and also take contrarian views.
Mm.
And then there is the old fashioned paper of record, like journalism as a vocation style of news.
Yeah,
which still exists in most countries, and it is important. And like you say, you usually have to pay for it, so it is worth paying for.
Yeah,
like frankly, the New York Times, the Irish Times, the likes of—I don't even know if the Guardian counts anymore. Maybe I hope so, but for like being good news. Yeah. Like,
I mean, I pay for the Guardian, so I hope so. Yeah. I hope they're using my money well.
Yeah, it probably does, but at the same time, the British media isn't a good example because the British media is very partisan and it's hard to tell. But yeah, like whatever, fill in the blank in whatever country you live in, you will know the one that is the good newspaper as opposed to the one that will print shit just to fucking rile people up and get them to buy more.
Yeah.
But it is trending one way, and I wonder if the idea of the type of journalism and newspapers that we're talking about is if this is the end of the era for it, because it was built on a particular business model that kind of doesn't really work anymore.
Yeah. I wouldn't have enough of their informed opinion to guess one way or the other. I worry about it, but I don't know enough about it.
Yeah. We'll see. It's probably, there's many books you could read about it.
Yeah. Did you have another?
No.
I was going to say, it may be in a similar vein. Another thing I wrote down that I learned is that Twitter is representative of Twitter.
Yes. Twitter not the world. Game.
Yes. Twitter is its own thing.
I don't necessarily begrudge people that enjoy it and put a lot of time into it, but I begrudge people that don't understand that it is Twitter.
Yes, that it's not like...
it's not the world. 10% of Irish people have a Twitter account.
Mm.
What percentage of those 10% of people use Twitter on an active
actively
basis?
Post it, and then...
a fraction.
Within that, a fraction. And then within that, you have also your own algorithmic echo chambers and stuff. So it's just, it's not, it's a piss poor barometer for, I think...
The problem is, and we've talked about this to death, but just to say again, the problem is that the people who love using it the most are journalists and politicians.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it gets overheightened in the mainstream media as well.
For sure it does.
But also, if you're an activist, you know, you've gone through this 5-year journey with us as well, and you're thinking about how best to do politics going forward, just remember, the way politics works on social media, the way you hear about it and listen about it on social media, you're doing it within that social media platform.
Yeah.
It has to be understood in that fact. And it is gamed and changed by the people who run those social media accounts to keep your attention there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, you can end up going into very bad places, going down, like, just getting yourself worked up over fucking nothing, probably.
100%.
And putting time and energy into stuff that could be put better at other places.
Like you're saying earlier, it's not the world.
It's not the world. That's the one thing to always remember, is that just because you're dead sure that X policy is popular because your Twitter friends think it is, you're going to be very surprised when you come out into the world and find out it's not.
Yeah.
No one has a fucking clue what you're talking about, John.
Exactly. Do you want to chat about how different the world is after 25 years?
I tried.
It's so big. Like, I mean, you're the one who wrote that down. Is there any reason, like, was there a particular thing you wanted to
I don't know why I wrote that down. That was stupid. I was thinking about that earlier. The only thing I could think is that the original thought was there's no Trump, so it's quieter. But it's not quieter because of COVID.
Yeah. It's almost like it's staggering how much has happened.
Yes.
I mean, you could pick any 5 years in history and you could, you know, pick a lot of things. And everyone thinks they live in the most important time in human history.
Sure.
But it's hard not to feel that way when you've got things like, you know, the global pandemic and...
But we're all back. Financial crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
The fucking 9/11, the war on terrorism, the invasions of Iraq and all the bombs going off.
Like,
The 90s kind of were a high. there was a long period of not much going on in the main Western world that people took for granted. But then go back to the 80s and you always think that you're in one of the weirdest and most important times in history.
Mm.
But that doesn't change the fact that you think that you're in the weirdest and most important time in history. It still does feel like that.
Yeah. I looked up what was the news headline on the day we recorded this 5 years ago.
Oh, good idea.
I've just got one because really this is the only news story worth mentioning 5 years ago. And this will also give you a perspective on how things have changed over 5 years. It's a BROP, B-R-O-P. Theresa May unveils softer new hairdo that is half bob and half crop for her Brexit speech.
A BROP.
A BROP.
I'd say Boris Johnson has a BROP most of the time.
That man is a BROP.
I'm very glad he's crashing and diving at the moment.
It really is, isn't it?
I'm quite confident that he'll shake it off and survive, but it's great to know.
Why do you think that is? Just because it's him?
Because it's him and because he has such a massive majority in the Commons. And he has an ability to shake shit off.
Mm, yeah, bit of a Teflon.
Bit of a Teflon guy.
Teflon kind of guy.
He won't last forever. No. He'll probably win his next election and then retire sometime after.
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently he thinks he'll be a PM who was just... will be known as like a crisis time PM. He just came into he got in on getting Brexit done. Then the pandemic hit. I think he could burn out.
I don't know.
Over the course of the pandemic.
I don't think that's true.
No.
I don't want to contradict you, but I'm going to contradict you.
That's fine.
We've been talking about him for years. He has been around and he's been a massive pivotal British political figure for so long as the Mayor of London, as a big media commentator before that. He has been around, and because of the head on him, you can just kind of tell that he was going to always go up there.
Yeah.
I tried to tell myself and others that he wouldn't get there because he was such a numpty, but I was clearly wrong. So I don't think it's true to say he's a crisis politician, because I think he probably would have ended up pretty high anyway, because he was just on that trajectory.
Oh, I don't mean that he got in because he's like, oh, he's a man for a crisis.
I think
he will, his term, his time will have been utterly defined by the crisis.
Sure.
And he won't, like, he'll burn out as the pandemic burns out or whatever other stuff. And I think that he'll just be known for that.
That's
time.
A good point, yeah. A lot of major politicians get tied to the crisis that they have. Should the Brits fucked out Churchill right after World War II?
Well, yeah, exactly. But it feels like a similar thing. And he'll be like the COVID PM.
Yeah, it could be.
And then like disappears. And then if we get a handle on the pandemic and then someone fresh comes up without all that baggage of the Christmas parties when they should have been, you know, all that kind of shit.
Yeah, I think he's going to shake that shit off, though. The people that voted for him just don't care about it.
Do you want to know what was the number one song when we recorded?
I would have no idea.
Well, it was Bad and Bougie by Migos featuring Lil Uzi Vert.
I have no idea.
I have no idea what any of
those
words.
What are you talking about? Are you having a stroke? What is going on?
Oh, man. You know what? One thing, I don't know who these are, but I'll tell you one thing. I wouldn't trust them with my new national anthem.
Are they Irish?
Lil Uzi Vert, yeah.
Could fucking be.
From the clan of Kilty Verts.
Bless you.
You know what also happened, like, pretty soon after we aired the first episode of One on Politics was La La Land was mistakenly announced as the best picture at the winners instead of Moonlight that time.
That happened
like 2 or 3 weeks after we...
Wasn't our fault though.
I don't know, man. The timing's really suspicious.
Yeah, that was a fucking hames of a disaster that Hollywood... I don't even think the Oscars have recovered from that.
No. Take that, Oscars. Yeah, just a lot of shit happened in the last 5 years. Like, I tried to start, like, listing
stuff. Why would you do that? I didn't mean that.
I know, but it's just, in terms of my own, like, the things that, like, our tenure, that fell within our tenure, that, like, did we talk about it? Did we not talk about it? Blah, blah, blah. And it's just so much stuff.
One thing I'm very glad that we shook off pretty early on, we probably very into it for the first year and a half, is that we would react to the news as well.
Yes.
And we were mad for doing, like...
Constantly worked in the news.
And there was so much shit going on. I remember recording, I was going over to, I guess, the Gorillas, maybe?
Mm.
I was flying over to the UK and we were doing, Theresa May had announced an election, or was election results or something like that.
There was a snap election.
Yeah, it was the results actually. That's what was, and we were going, I was going over to the Gorillas and I remember recording the episode with you in the airport on my phone.
Yeah, I remember
just
that.
So we could get one out.
Yeah.
Didn't fucking matter. No. Why were we doing that?
No idea. We were obsessed with that shit back then. It was like half of every podcast.
It was a thrill.
That was it. It kept it really current or something.
Yeah.
I don't know at what point we were like, fuck, why are we doing this? We are not a news show.
Yes,
this
is a streamer show. It was important to realize.
And it was just like, it was stressful. And it's like, what are we adding? Like, we're just like a shitty version of, like, you could just Google what
you
the events are.
Listen, overhear us talking about it in the pub.
Yeah.
Maybe that's podcasting.
Yeah. That's podcasting.
That's
maybe.
Podcasting.
Yeah.
Oh shit, we only just figured it out.
Oh my God. It only took us 5 years, but that's what podcasting is. That and podcasting.
I think we need to get another beer.
Yeah. Do you want to do that? 5 years in, do we want to talk about how different we are?
Oh, sure.
What's wrong? Do you want to? You talked a little bit about going through, being disillusioned, getting back into it, and then kind of settling out.
That was in relation to the politics part of it, yeah. Mm. I'd say, looking back, these are the 5 years I think that will have made me who I am. I'm not talking about why I'm politics there. I'm talking about it in general.
Oh, right. Okay. I was thinking, like, Jesus, that's a lot to put on the podcast. No, you had a very, very eventful.
It was quite eventful,
formative,
yeah.
Formative. I would describe it as a second puberty.
Pretty much. I mean, listen to how deep my voice is now. Yeah, lots of shit happened. Got married, got divorced, dad got sick, dad died.
Mm-hmm.
Bad place for a brief period.
Yeah.
And then ended up pretty good.
Yeah.
Got a pretty amazing girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Got a pretty sweet setup.
Mm-hmm.
Went back to college.
Yeah.
Will soon be laid off from a job I've never really wanted.
Those are the gods.
Yeah.
Maybe pulling some strings for you, I think.
Yeah. Swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
And we have Hercules now.
You do. He wasn't alive when we first started. There you go, buddy.
Hey, yeah.
Not a fucking easy time of it, but you handled it incredibly well. Incredibly gracefully.
I got there.
You wouldn't know going back over the pod. I was skimming around, jumping around the different areas of the podcast, thinking about that actually. Like, say, the episode when we got Jazza in because you couldn't record because your dad had just died.
Mm.
And the episodes either side of that. Like,
actually, how did you manage to record? You came over for the fucking funeral. must have fell well enough.
Yeah, it fell well enough. But you wouldn't know. You wouldn't know you were going through this.
The podcast was a nice relief at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was something to concentrate on and focus the mind and put the mind off the bad shit that was happening.
Mm.
As it was then, as I went through the breakup and divorce and resettling and all that.
Mm.
Yeah, so thanks for that.
Oh, I mean,
and you were there.
You did it all yourself.
You were there as an amazing friend the entire time. Like I said, you were. I remember I was telling you that, like, oh, we had to go in, wait around the hospital for a day as my dad got the big operation that would, like, make or break it. And you were like, oh, I'm getting on a plane going over. And I was like, no, you're not, you big idiot. The fact that I know you would have if I had said yeah.
I was looking at flights as you did. I was already like, yes, just now.
I'll just hang around with you. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
I was like, no.
But I would have just gone and, like, been near the hospital. I wouldn't go into the hospital because that would have been weird.
Out of my way, doctor. Yeah. I'll take care of this.
I've been Googling some shit on the flight over here and I got a pretty solid idea.
What the hell is that? Yeah, you've been an absolutely fantastic mate. And this show has been a great relief as well. And the fact that I've been able to do it with you helped a lot.
Yeah, I mean,
how shit would have been if it was Jer?
Oh, don't even talk to me.
Sorry, Jer, I'm joking. Jer, you've been like the third.
Yeah, he's the fucking...
the voice of nearly all the best
George
bits.
Martin, the George Martin of the show, I think the invisible third member. George Martin being the fifth Beatle.
Oh, right.
I already said...
Jer wrote Game of Thrones?
Yeah. Like, yeah, Jer, we can shout out to him. Every little silly thing. Like, he made whatonpolitics.games.
Yes.
He made mobile games based off this podcast. He was the voiceover talent for anything we needed done ever.
Ever. And what a talent.
He made music for the show for like silly little segments and stuff. Biggest supporter at the start, gave us notes and everything. Actually, that's one thing. There's a secret podcast episode that exists that was made exclusively for Jared that no one else will ever hear. That we made in our first year as a thank you to him for being so supportive. We tricked him. We made it look like it was a normal episode at the start. And we sent it to him saying, hey, because in the early days we used to send him the podcast before it went up, the first few, just to like check out for, because like he has a good ear for audio.
I didn't know you did that.
Yeah, yeah. if I was unsure about something, like if it was just like, hey, does this, like when I was editing and stuff, like, does this sound okay? Or does this make sense to a layperson, like another version of me, would you listen to this and know what we were talking about, basically? So we used to do that with Jared a lot, and then we made an episode just for him.
It was supposed to be
going, hey, can you check this out?
The Speaker of the House. And we were talking about this, the history of the Speaker of the House, and then we just said, psych.
Yeah, so we love you.
And Jer, this episode is actually
just for you, buddy. No. Those days are behind us.
It is for all the listeners. Before we talk about how you've changed, let's just briefly talk. We put out a call to the listeners on Instagram asking if you guys had any last questions or talking points. And like the bunch of wankers that you are, all you did was tell us how much you love the show.
Yeah, no talking points. I think that's because, like we said, we covered everything. So
they've covered it.
Their education is complete. The curriculum is so well produced and so well thought through and so conclusive.
It's basically going to replace the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Yeah, basically. So yeah, there's nothing left to learn, Alexander Wheat, because there were no politics left to what am.
One of our best listeners, Alexander.
Yeah, like, I mean,
he's great.
We got a load of... shout outs. I have some of them here, but like there's one in particular, just while we're on the subject of it, to shout out, who has actually like messaged us directly. This is Amy on Instagram. She said, thank you to both you lads for making such a funny and lighthearted but also caring and kind podcast, especially during the horrors of lockdown, which, though hard for everyone, was particularly hard for my family as my dad battled cancer. Your podcast was just one of the things that could make mine and my ma's week a little brighter. Which was lovely. Like, that was...
And the dad's okay.
And the dad's fine. Yeah, the dad...
all clear.
All clear. Doing well. So thank you, Amy. That was incredibly, incredibly sweet.
I'm glad we don't have the pressure of affecting people's lives anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, when people used to say, like, stuff about doing a college project based on an episode of the show.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, like, did he... like, fuck, shit.
Or...
like, you're going to... that's really sweet and everything, but please fact check your shit. I hope we are not the main, so it's fine to be the inspiration.
Did I tell you one of my colleagues on the course came to me and said, I'm after listening to your episode in my research for the PhD.
No.
Or for his dissertation, his master's dissertation. Yeah. He was doing Brexit and satire.
Yeah.
And our episode of Paddy Cullivan, whatever his name is, popped up and he listened to it and he goes, wait, I remember that voice from the Egypt that's asking awkward questions in class.
No way.
Yeah. And he pinged me and said it. Yeah.
Man, why that? That was my least favorite episode.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's interesting. What a weird dynamic to have with a classmate.
Don't know if you reference us in the end.
Yeah.
Richie, you live in England now.
I live in England now.
You lived in another place before.
I live in a different place.
Far away.
Who knows where I'll be next podcast. But yeah, started off in San Francisco, America, and then
working for big tech
in the pocket of big tech.
Can you say who it was now?
I think I've definitely said it. Someone's LinkedIn. I just didn't want to say at the time because I would record episodes of the podcast, because said this before so many times.
Their offices.
In their offices, because we would record on the weekend and I couldn't record in my...
In the CEO's jacuzzi.
I couldn't record in my apartment because it wasn't a good recording environment. I had roommates and wooden floors and all that kind of stuff and it just wasn't good. So I would go into... The offices were open the weekend and sometimes if there was a busy project or something going on, you might pop in and do an hour or two when it was quiet. And I figured, oh, I'll just go in there. They've got loads of like little cozy drop-in, like it's proper tech shit, like very modern, sleek offices. And like, oh, I'll go into one of the drop-in rooms and I'll just record there where it's all, because they're all insulated for remote meetings anyway. Mm. So I would do that. And then I just got way too comfortable because I was the only one in like a 27 story building in downtown San Francisco. And I was like the only one in it. And so I would just, you know, when we started drinking, I was like, I'll just drink here.
You got pished.
And I was just,
you got quite just pished really early drunk. In the morning.
Like early in the morning because of the time difference. Because it was evening time for you or whatever. But it would be like a Sunday at 11 a.m. or something like that. And we'd be having a drink. And we would be getting really into chatting and then chat afterwards or whatever. And then I'd end up leaving and chatting to security lad. I'd go in sober, come right. in sauce.
Good luck, Sean.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Anyway, and you wouldn't have eaten anything. You were like a little bit of yogurt or something.
Something like that yeah. from the fridges.
And then I remember one in particular, you went to edit in a cafe after. So you had a coffee to try and balance out. But then you felt too jittery, so you got another beer.
I remember that. Well, I was there. I got pretty buzzed from chatting to you, like drinking, that I went to Hearth in Castro, which is my favorite coffee place. It's like, okay, I'll start the edit here. And I just start sculling back coffee so I could try and sober myself up and take me into like an editing mindset. But then I drank too much of it. They had like really strong filter coffee and I drank too much of it. But then after two or three in that coffee shop, they would open up a couple taps so you could get a beer, like local beers there. So I was like, oh shit, okay, I'll take the edge off some of this coffee by drinking some pints.
What an up and down day.
What? Yeah, the things, yeah, I guess I was in my 20s. You could, you know, no effect on your body from doing shit like that. Anyway, and I don't do that now. And that's the biggest change in my life in the last 5 years.
You're in London now.
Mm-hmm.
London boy.
In London now.
There for the foreseeable.
For the foreseeable. Oh, I don't know.
Tired of it?
I'm a little bit tired of it. I never fell in love with London in the same way I fell in love with San Francisco.
Yeah.
It's too big. It's too big.
I was over there in November and it was the first time I was in a large city since COVID, actually just before COVID I went to New York. But even something about London, it's more frantic even than like the likes of New York or something like that. It's, everyone is constantly wired.
Yeah.
And it's not the kind of energy for me anyway.
No. And I never gelled with that energy. I'm there because basically work.
Yes.
So right now I'm working in, like I work for a big TV company and I get to make posters and stuff for them. And it's like a dream job. And those kind of opportunities are there in London.
Sorry.
Playing with the dog.
Hercules has from originally barking at Richie because he doesn't like new people to now giving him his toy to say, play with me. Well, look, we'll have you back. And actually, this is probably the opportunity for me to give you your final present.
Oh, for God's sake.
So I know you told me that you don't want this because you don't like having too much stuff. But when I said I'm getting really into Warhammer and I want someone to play against, I didn't listen to you. And I just got you some Warhammer. It's a starter set.
Oh, Steve.
With the brain push and pots. And you know what I find one of the best things about Warhammer? What? Well, second best, because I love playing it.
Yeah.
I've gone to a couple of tournaments and I love getting into it, even fucking massively complicated rules and all that shit.
Yeah.
Sitting and making a few models and then painting them is such a zen experience.
Yeah.
What's that flow thing?
The flow state, yeah.
It is so easy to get into the flow state when you're painting little plastic soldiers.
Man. So, you know, I did the Lord
of the Rings.
You
did the Lord of the Rings one, yeah. That's 20 years old this week.
Is it?
Yeah.
My favorite part of that was sitting down and painting little Frodo's cape and stuff like that. Oh, Steve.
Well, now you have 3 Space Marines.
Oh, I'm going to make them over to Christmas. And you know what? I'm going to use my 3 little Space Marines. I'm going to take down your whole fucking battalion.
Oh, no.
Because you know what? I'm not above cheating. I will disassemble my old Lord of the Rings ones and I'll give my Marines like Gandalf's staff and his spells.
Damn, I can't find any rule that negates this.
Yeah, and then you know what? I'll take out like my Blue Eyes White Dragon Yu-Gi-Oh card and I'll play that.
Fuck. Yeah, well, I'm going to put the fucking bell one, the Teddy Roosevelt.
Bobblehead.
It doesn't bobble that well, this one. You got a much better bobbly one.
Mm. Well, then I'll put a Beyblade on the table.
Sure, look. Hopefully you'll be over in the next year or two and then we can play more of that.
I think I will. I think within 2. But I've been saying that for years, haven't I?
COVID happened.
Yeah, COVID happened. That did kind of...
You were supposed to go travel the world and you're supposed to take a break from this shit.
I was supposed to do that, wasn't I? I got a little bit into it and then
COVID.
To come back.
The vid.
Oh, well.
Let's talk about the show.
Let's talk about the show. What about the show? What should we
talk about? And lows.
Well, do you want to start with, like, guests?
Yes.
Because our show, there was a time pretty early on where we realized we are going to have to start making guests a fundamental part of the show.
Yes.
Because it's a lot to expect you to know everything.
Yes.
You know.
Well, now you know.
Well, now. Yeah,
you have the napkin.
I've got the napkin that says Richie Knows Politics. But we knew early on that we would need guests. And I think we've done very well with getting guests. We've punched above our weight, it seems.
It has been shocking. Raise.
Yeah.
How many people have given us their time generously, openly, and endearingly. It has been great.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Incredibly sincerely.
One of the best feelings that I got when we do this show is when we finish an episode with a guest that we were very delighted to get. Not that we weren't delighted to get any of them, but it's not a friend of ours that owes us a favor.
Yes, yes.
And they said, geez, that was great.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed how that went, or like that was a bit different or something like
that.
Yeah, yeah. I love that feeling that I got after that.
Yeah, that is that. You're absolutely right. That is a lovely, lovely thing to like try and foster that kind of environment for these very, very talented people. Who do you have favorite? Like, notable?
I got a handful of favorites. I mean, I actually don't think we had any bad interviews.
No.
I know you think one of them was bad, and I will talk about that as well. Yeah. I was actually going to put it on one of my tops. Just
really?
For reasons that I'll address when you say about why he was shit.
Yeah.
Erin McGathy.
Yes.
That was so much fun.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. So she is a comic pro.
Mm-hmm.
She has come all the way from Hollywood to Dublin. She runs Mob Theatre with a bunch of other amazing people, which is an improv school in Dublin now. But we're talking like proper Hollywood level comedic talents that agreed to record a random thing called What I'm Love, because she used to do a podcast about love.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the show, but you'll find it if you Google her. All the episodes are still there. She told amazing stories, funny anecdotes, and it was just a great time. And I don't know if you got as smashed on your side, but I got absolutely fucking hammered.
I remember very well.
We
recorded for like 2 hours and ended up with like a 50-minute podcast because you guys got particularly sauced.
She was drinking straight gin.
Yeah. I'm very rarely like the one shepherding these things.
Yeah.
I think you're better at keeping things like on topic and keeping things strategically relevant. But I found myself herding cats in that moment, like, for God's sake.
And maybe it wasn't one of your favorite episodes, but it sure was mine.
No. It was great. I did love it.
I love the episode with Brendan Byrne.
Brendan Byrne.
The space one.
Oh my God, what a space, yes.
I just followed Brendan Byrne because like I find that he's a political reporter who talks about space for public radio in Florida.
Yeah.
And I just said, fuck it, he's got my surname, maybe he'll do it. And he did.
Yeah, he did. And he was so fucking charming.
You have any favorites?
Yeah, I've got a fair few. I really liked episode 69, What Am the Politics of Sex.
Yeah.
That was great with Shauna Scott, sex owner and proprietor of Sand Smut Peddler, Shauna Scott.
Shauna has since gone to Sligo to settle and live there. She's
really?
Been there for 2 years. Yeah, she went up in lockdown with her partner.
Yeah. Anything that like episodes that took like a perspective that, you know, we as just like two straight white dudes, like something that was like outside of our realm of experience, which is a lot. But people like self-made man, Noah Halpin, you know what I mean? Like talking about what I'm trying to try. That was amazing.
That was amazing.
That was like proper, like the ones that made me like, I know it's not supposed to be an emotional thing, but the ones that had like such good personal stories that like about him. And then also Tony Walsh, curator of the Irish Queer Archive for What I'm Pride.
Some of those bits were really heartbreaking.
Those like, I cried in that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That like stuff like that, like powerful stuff that's outside of our experiences. I think those are the ones that stick with me the most.
I loved Zainab Ghulamani from the Muslim Council.
Absolutely. That was a great
one. She was amazing just talking about what it's like, the politics of Islam, what it's like to be a Muslim in the UK.
Even just like culturally what it's like to be, like stuff like that. I knew nothing about it.
And she recorded just after Ramadan, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Brezzy. I'm glowing now just talking about Brezzy. But again, cried on that one.
One of the best ones of the last few, Caoimhe de Barra, Heather Trocra.
Oh
and
my God.
We nearly didn't do it.
Yeah.
So a little bit of background knowledge here. One of my great friends, Teresa Newman, asked us to do this. And Teresa had gotten us many of our biggest guests over the years just through her own personal connections. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, oh, so we need someone that's a bit of crack. She goes, oh, I don't know. And then, we were a bit hesitant, but we got the head of Trocra.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned out to be one of the most impressive, informative, and engaging guests.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. 100%. I learned so much about how to carry yourself, let alone the topic.
Yeah, yeah.
I just was so impressed with her as a person and as a force. It was amazing. Yeah. And also learned a fuck ton about development aid.
100%. Yeah. Christ, yeah, we've done very well with guests, haven't we?
Too well.
Too well.
We didn't deserve it.
What the fuck?
You're welcome, listeners.
Yeah, you're welcome. I don't know. And then, of course, there's like the old favourites, the consistent, you know, Donal. had him, you know, over a half dozen times. Yeah. And Jerry's been on a bunch.
Peter Kavanagh,
Lena Norms, always an absolute delight and treasure.
We only had Lena once, though. We were on her show.
We had her for feminism.
Yeah.
And we had her for the live show.
That's true. I forgot about the
live show. And then we were on her show.
The one where she came over to Ireland, Steve.
Yes, the one where she flew to a different country and appeared on stage with us. How could you forget? And the live shows were great as well.
The live shows were amazing. I did not think we would get anything like that.
Yeah. The buzz of it. And we're not performers. Like, we're not like influencery types. We're not like,
I think we did well in the live shows.
Yeah, but that's why I'm surprised.
If you're looking at the strengths and weaknesses of what we've done over this thing, we weren't good at the internet shit, ironically, considering this is a podcast. We're not good at pushing online. We don't have the stamina or the interest.
No, I don't want to be an influencer. Yeah. That's no interest in me whatsoever.
But I disagree to say that we're not performers. I think we did very well. I think you put a fuck ton of effort and energy into each one of those to try and make them just great shows.
Well, I see. I think the reason I put so much effort into them is because I didn't think I was a performer.
And
so I was like, I would just put a lot of work into videos and games and presentations. And
if those were I was going to say crutches, but that's not accurate. Those were your fucking running blades for the Paralympics and you ran faster than a person.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. That's a good way of looking
at it. Turned out really good. And yeah, I felt a huge relief having them there as well. I knew that if we had fucked up and we were shite, we could just go, look at this amazing artwork.
That's
but we didn't have to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We never had to do that out of the three shows. Even the Electric Picnic one, which there was only one guy and his girlfriend and our friends.
There was some people at the back that came in and out.
Okay. I wanted to know who that guy was that was very clearly there enjoying himself, having a great time, and I think was a listener, but then fucked off before talking to us.
Yeah. I'd love
if you're still listening to the show, guy.
We love you.
send us an Instagram message or something.
Unless you're like one of us from the future who traveled back in time.
Well, that's fine. Send us an Instagram message too.
Yeah.
Oh.
It just came through. Yeah. I mean, like it's hard to, like, we've done 140 of these, and even more when you think about the bonus episodes and the like extra feed drops and all the little animations and promos and
minisodes for a while.
Minisodes and all that kind of shit. There's so much stuff. Like, we've forgotten more stuff than we'll ever know, pretty much. Like, Amy, who I gave a shout out to earlier, part of that Instagram exchange was her mentioning how she still often thinks about a joke from the show.
Your joke.
But this is the thing, I had no recollection of ever making this joke.
I didn't either.
And I asked her, she said, oh, she still laughs about this with her mom. And I said, what joke are you talking about? And she clipped it out and sent it to me. I'll play here and I'll cut it into the show. So, you know, I don't know if you're aware, Steve, but seven of some of the most influential leaders of world powers are currently interrailing their way around France right now, staying in cheap hostels and drinking tins of Polish beer, just having the bands, just discovering themselves politically, economically and sexually.
Ooh.
Otherwise known as the G7 summit.
That was the joke.
Politicians discovering themselves politically, economically and sexually.
It's very funny.
The G7 summit.
That is very funny.
And that's what we used to
do. And you know what? I was thinking it was going to be about the G7 summit that was in England. We've gone through a lot of G7
summits
in our time.
We've done a few now at this point,
But I was in the same town as the G8.
What? When?
The last G8.
Really?
Yeah. And I was at a peace process program after my undergrad in DCU in Enniskillen, Northern Ireland.
Oh, wow.
And the G8 was happening nearby. So like Obama and Cameron flew by in a Land Rover, like on the street when we were walking past, and like Putin was around. And all the mad.
You were getting a breakfast roll and Putin was ahead of you in the line.
Apparently, I didn't see this myself, but a bollard blocked the road and the Putin convoy had to stop. And all the locals were like, how are you, Putin? Hello. And he just was dead straight forward. I don't think it was him.
No.
He was in the boot.
In the boot.
In the boot. But made the security boot. And we'll be invited to the next one, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure.
We will help them find themselves. What was it again? I've forgotten already.
Helps find themselves
spiritually,
discovering themselves politically, economically, and sexually. Otherwise known as
politically, economically, and sexually. Those are accurate, but the way you phrase them, I assume that you're saying like sexual, like fucking, I don't know, spiritually,
yeah,
culturally, and sexually, sexually. But no, you're not.
No,
you're a funny guy, Richie Nolan.
How about best non-guest episodes? Just when it was just you and I just shooting the shit.
Some of those ones were some of my favorite, yeah. But at the start, I remember them being incredibly stressful.
Yeah,
they were.
Yeah,
they were a slog to get our groove. But once we found our groove, and we found it earlier on.
Yeah, yeah,
it got pretty easy.
Yeah, and I think we overthought it at the start. We researched the shit out of it. There was like loads of back and forth.
I would get jumbled, and it got really confusing. Yeah,
and then
we had to stop and restart a few of them.
Yeah, 100%. But a lot of that was just because I couldn't, like, the political capital, which ended up being one of our most important episodes, even just important in terms of my own the curriculum and education on politics. Political capital is one of the core tenets that I needed to wrap my head around.
That's really funny because it kind of speaks to the thing that you noted as having made the most impact, mm-hmm. the intangible, ethereal thing that isn't there and yet is politics.
Yeah, yeah. Like even, I mean, earlier chatting about Boris and stuff, like he's losing some political capital sure. now, but like you can't,
but he's the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, but that's it. Like the guy's got a lot, I guess, after last general election stuff, but
or he might not. It might be a load of mirrors, who knows. Yeah,
but that's it, and it's so important to know to not, because it's impossible to know for sure, but just understand, try and comprehend this intangible thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, back in the, yeah, but like we tried doing that episode 3 or something, and I just couldn't understand it.
Well, political jargon is one of my favorite episodes.
Political jargon is great.
That was a big long list.
Yeah,
that was fun. That yeah. was informative, and yeah, that was good.
That's a good one. Yeah,
was political capital in that, or did we do its own episode?
I think we did its own episode, or maybe we did.
I don't know if we did.
Maybe it was just covered in jargon.
Might have been.
Yeah. I loved Watergate. That was
I forgot about that one.
That was a great one. That was like a fun heist episode.
Yeah. A few people have come back to me and said that that was a great episode as well, actually. Yeah,
I think it's one of our most downloaded.
Is it?
If I remember correctly.
Wow. It was very well timed. I don't know if that was intentional, but like that was during the whole impeachment
and
Trump and Mueller thing.
Yeah, maybe that's why it did well. I love Podibition.
Oh, yeah.
Dumb piece fun. I loved any of the dumb, overly produced shit.
Yes.
Do you remember?
We had notions.
We did. A lot of it was because I studied audio in multimedia and DCU. Audio was like a big part of my second year.
That's why we're here.
The major thing.
That's why I own all this
fucking gear around us. But I've then afterwards became a designer, and I've been a designer for like a decade now.
Yeah.
But I had all this like pent up energy. I wanted to be a sound designer. I wanted to do film sound. And so
it would just
bleed through into this shit. Like, do you remember when Brexit went through, we did a Brexit Day relaxation special?
I was scrolling through it earlier on. Yeah. I was tempted to click it, but then remembered that it wasn't really a relaxation episode.
No, not at all. It's like, it starts off as like whale sounds talking in whispers.
And then
Cthulhu shows up. I go for a walk to go look at Big Ben because I look at the symbol of British stability and Cthulhu is sitting on it.
He is sexually...
He's deriving pleasure from sitting on the bell.
That's a good summary of What On Politics right there.
Yeah.
So we also had notions to do a dramatic episode where we would start doing an episode and then we'd be talking about the Large Hadron Collider.
That's it.
And then we'd be sucked into an altered dimension where a descendant of Theodore Roosevelt had become the monarch of America, and it was like a dystopia.
It was going to be our April Fool's Day episode.
Yeah.
And it was going to start off with the news at the start was talking about weird disturbances with the Hadron Collider. It's, you know, it's happening in motion, so we know we don't fully know the full picture, so we'll keep an eye on it, maybe talk about it next week, and then blah blah blah.
Do you know what? Maybe stay subscribed.
God, yeah.
Not promising anything, but you know, it's not that big a deal to have one extra thumbnail in your list of subscribe shows.
Yeah, maybe. There'll be another pandemic and we'll find ourselves with more extra time. And
I love the UFO episode.
The UFO episode was great.
Yeah, the
animation of you floating around.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. Yeah, shout out to the graphics.
Yeah, they're on the USB key as well. The little animation of you.
I could feel them. Mm. Yeah, no, just like it was amazing. And then you did that little the research segment as well, where you told the story of blanking on it now, but I remember thoroughly enjoying it
in the UFO episode?
In the UFO one. Yeah.
What did I talk about? I vaguely, this is ringing bells. I do remember researching
this. This is actually really funny because I can't remember the specific episode. It was something about like this guy was doing UFO shit or was involved in UFO shit, and then it turned out to be some naturally explainable phenomenon. Mm. But it went on for ages. And I was simultaneously listening, going, he's talking too much. This is going on too long. This is not relevant. But then at the end, I was like, wow.
I need to go back and listen. This is what I mean by we've been doing this for 5 years. There's too much stuff here.
And I'm still eternally grateful that you let me do a two-part special on Theodore Roosevelt, not even a year into recording.
Two of my favorite episodes. There's nothing more interesting to me than listening to someone who's passionate about a subject just go off on that. Even if it's of no relevance to my life, there's something so endearing about someone. Like, you could be the person who puts little metal caps on the holes in that your shoelaces go through and boots and stuff. And if there's like a history to that and you find that fascinating and you want to talk about it, I'll listen. I love that shit. So the idea of like two episodes of my friend talking about
it. I don't know if you're diminishing this importance of Theodore Roosevelt.
If you want to talk about some pathetic little dead man from history that I don't give two shits about, but you think it's cute, fine. No. At the start, I was like, do you really think we're going to get two episodes out of this? I didn't think. It's like, what is there going to be to talk about? Like, this,
we only touched the surface.
Oh my God. And like at the end of and when we finished that first one, because I think did we record them back to back and then release them over 2 weeks?
Yes.
But when we was like, okay, and that's the end of part one, and we did our closey bit for that episode, I was like, let's fucking go. Like, I need to know about this, dude. This is like Batman year one, and I want to go on to year two now. Like, this is fascinating. So yeah, you are more than welcome for that. I love doing that.
Worst episodes.
I had just written down one here and I wrote down satire. The satire episode.
Why do you think it was the worst?
I think I really didn't agree with our guest on the whole thing of like, oh, you can't joke about that nowadays.
He was anti-PC.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, oh, you can't joke about that. And that's just like a bugbear in mind. That's a real gripe. Yeah. Because I think that is a true sign of like, I don't want to be disparaging towards him, but it's like you can joke about stuff. You just have to do it about in a empathetic way, in a smart way, and you need to punch up or punch across, not punch down. I think that's like the basics for me, is like punching up is where humor's at strongest. And if you're just like saying, oh, you can't make jokes about trans people, not that he said that, but you know what I mean, you can't make jokes about X, Y, or Z because, you can't say anything to that group or whatever.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Then it's like, well, fucking yeah, probably because that group, that group doesn't need more hardship.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know who's had it pretty hard? That group. Like, they don't need more of that shit, like more people piling on.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I didn't agree with him. It was very awkward.
Mm.
And I don't know if I ever fully listened to it again, but a couple of people have come back to me and said that they really enjoyed it and they thought it turned out really well. And they understood that we disagreed with Paddy.
Yeah.
But we were still accommodating of him. We weren't dismissive of him. We tried to engage him.
Yeah.
Granted, you're effectively, it is one of them points where there is no common ground necessarily. If you're not going to meet halfway.
Mm-hmm.
But to a certain extent, that's kind of one of the, that has to be one of the most important things in politics at the moment. Like, Paddy wasn't actively advocating for the persecution or harm of people. Of anyone, like, but he was a crank, effectively.
Yeah.
But he was cranky for whatever reason, and I'm actually not even sure what he was referencing. If he's been called on something that annoyed him or one of his friends, but I think, and he brought it in a weird way, and he came to the episode with a different idea of what he wanted to talk about compared to ours.
Mm.
But I still think it was important to do it, and I think it was the whole point of Wild on Politics is that we didn't go down hard on any particular side. I know someone that disagrees with us will listen and go,
yeah,
you big lefty fucking woolly eejits. Of course you did.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've got a whole thing on that, on like the whole, and maybe we can take a tangent to talk about in the early days being very centery about, not even being very centery, but being like, if you listen to their first episode, which I did this morning, I kept saying over and over again about wanting to understand it from every perspective, about wanting to like understand why did the Trump voters, like, it was a real thing for me.
Well, you learned the other perspective. That's the
it.
Thing.
I was like, I wanted to be bipartisan as possible. I wanted to be like, and I kept hitting on it a lot. And I think I've gone on this like little journey of at the start, because I knew nothing, right? And when you come into something fresh, you default in the middle, right? And I guess that was my thing. It's like, I want to suss it all out.
Do you know that that's one of the rarest things that people do, actually? That was a pretty active and good decision that you made to decide to start in the center. Most people grab onto a team and run with it.
Yeah, well, I guess because I was so outside of it that I didn't feel like I had that. I wasn't on Twitter. I wasn't like...
But that's because you're smart enough to know not to do that, though.
I guess
that's what I'm telling you. There are so many people that get involved in politics and grasp onto something and say, I'm a communist now. Everything is communism.
Yeah.
And if you're not on board with communism, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Or the other way, which is way more dangerous, I'm a racist now or whatever. I'm a libertarian, small government, anti-woke guy, and everything that isn't that is a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
There are so many people that just grab onto that and run with it. And I think that's more the fault of the internet than it is with people.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, no, you coming to it from the center and then figuring out where you fit into it.
Yeah.
It's part of a journey.
Yeah. And I find myself gone more and more left.
Oh yeah.
Like to the point where I'm like, and I think I went on this journey at the start I was like, yes, kind of more centery. And then I would learn about these things. Like you would bring me these subjects and I'd like drink it in, like the unions episode, go, oh fuck, this is the shit that unions said. Amazing. More unions. And then we talked to the Adam Smith folks. Great interview. I didn't agree with anything they said, but it was great to chat to them.
They were great people.
They were lovely people. Don't agree with them at all, but they're lovely people. And like free market bullshit. Like, and I found myself going, no. And then I got a little taste of the being an angry lefty, like, fuck that. I fuck anyone who doesn't want these things. But then as I got more and more into it, and then the big thing for me was going to therapy and just chilling out and like learning to process my own thoughts and emotions. And then also that of other people and learning to be more empathetic, because like your mental health in general will always get better the more empathetic you are. And learning to apply that empathy, the empathy in therapy, I had to learn, do a lot of applying empathy to myself, and then from that she recommended applying it to other people. And when I did that, my anger was then directed more towards I still found myself skewing left, but the anger was more towards the systems rather than like people. And I became like very empathetic towards people, almost like towards people who had radically different perspectives to me.
That's a good point.
I almost didn't like that same anger, just wasn't there for that person. It was almost like a little bit of melancholy, maybe like, oh God, like, why do you think this way about the vaccine or whatever? Rather than like, fuck you for thinking that way about, you know,
worrying about the vaccine. And that's a very important point.
Not to say that there are still like people. There are bad actors and there are people worthy of
it in bad faith. And especially in the media environment that we're in, there's a lot of money to be made for shilling one hard side or the other.
Yeah, of course.
Sometimes people are not being, what's the word? They're not being honest.
Yeah.
They're disingenuous and they're doing it to get something from you.
But to go back to your earlier point, we are all just meat sacks powered by electricity and dreams, and we're all just doing our best. And yeah, you're right. There are bad actors and there are people worthy of your anger and vitriol. But I think in general,
Donald Trump.
Don't stand down on that. Exactly. And nor should
and people that enabled him.
Exactly. And nor should you, because it's important for accountability and stuff. But targeting that same vitriol and anger that is easy to apply to people have faces, but to invisible systems is healthier, I found, from therapy and that kind of thing. Can't remember what this tangent was about and why I felt like I needed to go on it. But I think it was just like that journey of going centery, center left, lefty, but then also not being an angry lefty who gets because it's a trend on the left is carrying the weight of the world, but like it can be exhausting and it can be very bad for your mental health and stuff. So just like targeting the invisible systems that we're all a victim of.
That's what I was talking about earlier on. It's effectively down that way will lead to madness unless you know how to protect yourself.
Yeah.
And that is that's a very difficult skill to master.
Yeah.
And fair fucks to you if you can.
Yeah. And actually, maybe that's a good thing for us to talk about now. Again, we're on a tangent, but that's fine. I think this is a good one. We listened to our mental health episode. Like we talked to Brezzy and then we talked about our own mental health journeys. And they are kind of like tied to politics in some way or another. Like, you know, how you consume the news or like what the political landscape is did for me have an impact on my mental health and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be frank, it wasn't what my one was.
Yeah.
And my one was circumstantial.
Yeah, for sure. But it can have a very strong impact. And the more you can arm yourself with things, go to therapy. Cut back on your media consumption or your social media consumption if there's a lot of this political charge stuff. That's maybe damaging you psychically. Look into that instead of just going flowing along, because that's the way you've always done things. I think I've benefited hugely from taking a step back from these things. So if politics is getting you down, there's absolutely, you don't need to keep up.
No.
You're not a professional politician.
Take a break. I'm sorry, listener, but I don't mean to burst your bubble, but it'll keep going. Politics will keep politicking.
Yeah.
Even if you're not reading that live feed from whatever that's happening right now on whatever website you choose to do it, it's going to keep happening anyway.
Yeah. If there's a big thing, like if there's a meteor coming, you'll hear about it.
You'll hear. There's a movie. I can't wait for that movie coming out with Leonardo DiCaprio. Have you seen the ads for that one?
Don't look up.
Don't look up.
Adam McKay.
He looks to be like a normal person with anxiety issues who's tasked with telling the world about this meteor that's coming. And most of the scenes from the advert are him having panic attacks in bathrooms. I identify a lot with that.
No one will believe him. He's just an anxious guy.
He's just like, ah!
Yeah, I hope that that's a good film.
So unless you're in that exact circumstances, listener, don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, you know, read about it 3 days later. You'll be fine. It will be fine. Trust us. It will be fine.
Yeah.
Unless, you know.
Unless it won't be fine.
Unless
it
takes
months.
Unless it won't be fine. Yeah.
Sorry that we'd say that.
I mean, I don't want to get all big metaphysical and like centrist liberal, but like that's ultimately what I am.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm effectively a centrist liberal. I mean, I don't really like the labels too much because they're too specific to apply to something as vague as politics.
Yeah.
But if I was to come down to it, I would be on Stephen Colbert's joke that what was it, the tangent of history trends?
The history has a well-documented liberal bias.
Effectively, that's how things seem to be rolling. It isn't happening without effort. It effectively is the equivalent of that Greek legend of your man rolling the stone up the hill. Mm. The only difference being is that it hasn't rolled down yet. But, you know, in fact, a lot of people putting a lot of effort into it keeps that hill rolling up.
In this metaphor, who's rolling it up the hill and what's the stone? And what's the hill?
People that are rolling it up the hill are the hundreds of thousands of people that do go out of their way, that put themselves into the political maelstrom and act as forces for good.
Mm.
There have been people in history, there are people who are working now who are doing that. I think the problem, and they need to do that because there are things that are wrong in the world that need to be changed. Those systems, those infrastructures, the thing that we considered to be real and tangible and whatever, that the human political structure, it can be changed and it must be changed in certain instances. There are individuals who push that rock up the hill.
Yeah.
I think the problem with the modern age, and, you know, this is going to be a little bit Paddy Cullivan-y, but a lot of people think that it's them.
That are pushing the rock up the hill. Yeah.
Yeah, you think that it's you because
this tweet is going to do it.
This opinion. This like. Yeah. You need to take a step back and be a bit more zen about it. If you're enjoying it, you're having fun and you're doing all that and you feel that you're making a difference, then go ahead and do that. But don't be one of the people that get too wrapped up in the world of social media, of media consumption, of politics as a game, of politics as like a team sports thing that you're supposed to support and follow like fantasy football. It's not. It's not like that.
Mm.
It's way more than that and it's way less than that at the same time.
Yeah.
So just be careful. Watch yourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Protect yourselves.
Yeah. Do you know what the worst episode I thought we made was?
Yeah.
The second Game of Thrones one.
It was I forgot we did two.
That was lazy. Why the fuck did we do
what
that?
What did we even talk about in the second?
How shit it was, probably.
Oh, yeah. Because it was around time of the finale or something. Yeah, maybe that was a slow week.
That was bad. That was a lazy, lazy, lazy week.
They can't all be winners. But hey, so was the fucking last episode, the final season of Game of Thrones was also phoned in a bit, so maybe it's relevant.
Okay.
Maybe we're just doing a commentary on the chaps who wrote it. But yeah, I think in general we've been all right. Our hit rate's been pretty good. Not to pat ourselves on the back too much.
Yeah,
it's been all right.
We haven't had that many duds.
I mean, now 140, I'm sure, is a handful, but yeah. I really enjoyed the Head Stuff Plus bonus episode that we ended up putting on the main feed, the political or the fictional characters as leaders.
Yeah, if you are a subscriber, if you are one of the very few people that are subscribers to Head Stuff Plus, that will be cancelled soon and we probably will just put them all in.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Everyone can listen.
Thank you for your support, of course.
Yes, thank you. Absolutely. Anyone who...
supported us in any way.
In any way, follow, a like, came to the show. Nice message, it came to a show. Fuck, definitely people who came to the show. We've gotten loads of lovely messages over the years, emails and stuff that have just been...
Got artwork on the wall from a listener.
We've got artwork on the wall from a listener. We've both got two discrete different pieces of paintings from listeners.
When she found out that we didn't work in the same office.
Yeah, that we didn't have an actual office. I think we joked about having a What on Politics office. Did we? And I think that was why. But like, no. So she gave us two separate custom pieces.
You got Teddy Roosevelt writing Rapidash. I got Teddy Roosevelt punching a Nazgul.
Yeah, like amazing stuff. Anything, anyone at all who did anything, it's put an extra layer to this. Because really, like, we would have been doing this either way at the start. I did just think about this just being a Skype call. You and I would have a few beers. Because again, this was me in San Francisco. I was like, I haven't been chatting to Steve as much as I did when I was in Dublin.
You said it as a podcast, though.
I said it as a it was, but when I first thought of it, I was like, "Oh, I can just call, like, we can just
a recorded Skype call.
We could just call, like, have a chat and have some beers, and I could just ask him questions."
It's very clear that you didn't know yourself.
But then,
to think that you would allow that to go out on the air with your name on it, a Skype call recorded. Blech.
No, but not even recorded. But it was like, at first, it was like, "Oh, I'll call him and I'll have a few beers and we'll catch up and I can ask him these things."
Oh.
But then I was just like, "Oh,
this before you message
like
me,
this sounds like a pod." Yeah, this is before I message you. I was like, "Oh, that sounds like a podcast. That sounds like how people do podcasts." And I was like, "Maybe it should be a podcast." And then whatever. So having people who actually wanted to listen along with this,
shocking.
Yeah, shocking. But it definitely added an extra dimension to it. And I don't know, it sustained us for 5 years. So
it did. Yeah,
it for 5 years.
Yeah. We've kept this up for every 2 weeks for 5 years.
It's like, the longest project.
We're taking quite a few breaks this year for different reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
I was doing my studies, COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
Frankly, the buzz was probably gone out of it this year more than any of the other ones.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't not enjoy doing it.
No, for sure. But it
wasn't the same thrill or the same urge to need to get out there and push them.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why.
And that was why, that was like, I think we both felt it and we both had a call and we both had the same kind of feeling. And we gave ourselves time to process and then come back and then go, do we definitely want to do this? Yeah. It wasn't a trivial thing. We just decided. But I'm glad. And it's been really nice because people's reactions were like, okay, I'm glad you're doing it that way rather than let it fizzle out.
Yeah.
Which is nice because, yeah, God, the idea of like doing it out of any sort of obligation rather than, you know.
Yeah.
Because basically when I boil it down, as I was putting together that USB key and going through stuff, what was giving me the heart tinglies was that this has just been 5 years of chats with one of my best friends. Like that's basically what it is. It's just like us chatting and doing this thing together. And that's, I think, what made it so special and so nice.
It has been that for me as well. And it has been like, it's been an amazing way to keep in touch with you as you've flown around the world and done all your adventuring.
Mm.
But it has also been an outlet for me to talk bullshit about politics and claim that I have some side of like, It's the one little bit of a one up in the pub chat. It's like, well, on my podcast, I said, not that I did that much. And I hardly ever, I'd be too shy to mention it to most people that I would do it.
Well, it goes back to that thing of like, we're not good at promoting ourselves and that.
Sure.
So we're not influencery types. I didn't like bringing it up to the point where I have a beautiful audio setup in my room at the desk for recording these podcasts. Sure. Got the boom arm like you're using there and it's all beautifully set up. In a time now where I'm working remotely the whole time, I could just like leave that in shot and use that for my Zoom calls. I go out of my way to hide it out of shot so I don't need to tell people I do a podcast. Because if they see my podcast setup, I need to talk to them about it. And I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, which again feeds into us not really being very good at promoting.
And we should have been better because, do you know what? One of the things that gave us an edge on this has been your skill at making it so much more professional than it ever deserved to be in terms of the audio quality and the graphic design.
Oh, but that was just, again, that's just, again, I started doing it when I was working at LinkedIn and I love my time working at LinkedIn, but it wasn't the most creatively fulfilling job. I was working at a tech company and the tech company was, you know, a professional brand. So it wasn't the most, like now I'm designing posters for TV shows stuff. So, you know, I get that creative fulfillment there. But the early days, the reason like no fucking podcast does custom artwork themselves for every episode. That's a very rare thing, really. But I was just like, I want to make things.
Yeah. But people, like,
you know what the sad thing is? I only feel like that. I was never happy with the logo or any of our stuff. I always complained to you about like wanting to change the font all the time. You're like, I don't care. But I'm like, Steve, I think we might need to change the font.
You would say,
font.
Oh, you've used the wrong logo, Steve. That's like 17, that's 17 editions ago. We've gone through beta testing. We're on alpha version now.
I've slightly rotated. The kerning's different now, Steve. Like, God damn. The teal is a slightly brighter
so
teal.
When you say, I responded with, I don't care. It's not that I didn't care. It's that, okay, yeah. I
mean, well, that's it.
But like, I cared, and I have it on my wall, and I'll always have it on my wall. And like, yeah, I just I didn't have that ability to push it forward like that as well. Like, I just didn't have the either technical skills or even the urge to do it.
Well, yeah.
But it gave us a leg up. I think it helped to get us all those guests. Like, if we sent them a link to the website, they see this fucking amazing website with all this amazing artwork.
Yeah.
It made us more than just two buddies chatting to each other about politics.
Mm. Yeah. It was also just fun to do. The artwork and that kind of thing. Speaking of the artwork, I noticed when I was going through this stuff for the drive, the artwork for our GDP, we did an episode on GDP. Can you remember why the artwork for that GDP episode is a picture of someone in a shite horse costume with the letters GDP shaved into the side of that horse costume?
It was an in-joke in the episode.
I know, I have no recollection of this.
It was an in-joke in the episode. And we were on it a particular, it was during the COVID times when there was the big, there was a little bit of pushback against lockdown and the business impacts that it was happening.
Right.
And we were kind of pushing back against that, saying that things are more important than the idea of GDPR,
yes,
which is effectively only this hazy.
GDP, not GDPR.
GDP, sorry. this hazy economic stat that we have to represent the mad fucking psychological thing that is economics.
Yeah.
So I effectively think what we said was that it's basically just the back of a horse with GDP shaved onto it. And then you put it into the artwork and I was like, are you sure?
I guess I was sure at the time. I'm not sure now, but it's there forever. Oh, the other thing that's,
what are you going to do for this artwork?
I think I'm going to do a big, because this is the thing. Only now am I happy with this style of our episode artwork. I've changed it to all the collage.
Yeah, they're lovely.
Yeah, and it's like, it's much easier to make.
It's funny because I love the other ones. I do love these ones, but I think as episode artworks, the other ones are better.
No, collage all the way. Okay. I'll probably do a big flowery collage of like different pictures of us and like Herc's in there and Michael D. Higgins is in there and a bunch of stuff. I don't know. I'm saying that. I'll figure it out. Oh yeah. You know what else is on that drive? All of our Twitter and Instagram activity. So you're able to
notice that you got that email. I got the email to say you were thinking, and I was like, oh no, Richie wants to turn them off.
No. I just went, because you're able to go, because of GDPR, you're able to request all of the information, haven't you? So I submitted for that, and it takes like 24, 48 hours, but they basically collate everything, every like, every follow, every interaction, everything that they have. I just downloaded all of it and zipped it, and everything for Instagram and Twitter, all of our posts, all of our interactions, comments, thread, everything.
I feel a lot of weight to having this again.
I know. Again, like, please back it up. It's a bad USB key. It's not good. Back it up somewhere. I already have it back up myself.
Okay.
And the other thing is, once I edit and do the artwork and stuff for this episode, you'll need to stick it on that drive. There's an empty folder.
I wanted to point that out at the start of the episode, but I thought it would be a big clip.
There is a empty folder called 150 dash What Am Politics parentheses the finale.
Brilliant.
So
is this actually episode 150, or have we done a Stephen Byrne talking about Donald Trump thing?
This is episode 150. No, 140, sorry, not 150,
easy.
140.
Easy. I didn't think it was as milestone-y.
No.
We were tempted to keep going, but nah. End of the year is a good point to finish. Actually, one of the reasons that I'm making the slip up of saying GDPR, and I guess this is one of the points that I am still going to try and be active and hold institutions to account, is that I gave a bit of money to UNICEF after I got my vaccine for their big campaign about donate to children to get it. And I opted out of getting the promo material, and I got it every month for 4 months. So I sent them an email in November saying, stop sending to me. And then a month later, I got it from Thingy, and they ignored my first email. So I said, under GDPR, I am requesting that you delete my data because I told you to stop sending it to me. 2 days later, I got an email from one of the directors apologizing.
Oh, yeah.
And then a couple of days later, Anya, my girlfriend, got an email saying, we've done an investigation and done it. So there are still instances where you can do these little things that make a difference. They were printing and spending money on crap that I didn't open. I just put it straight into the recycling bin. So it was a waste of their resources and a waste of my time.
Yeah.
There are little things that you can do. And yes, that comes from
the EU.
The EU, as Donald great for
that
pointed
shit.
Out.
Yeah, great for all that stuff. Yeah, you do have rights when it comes to this stuff. Yeah. Especially, yeah.
Well, unless you live in England.
Yeah, well, God help those people.
Yeah, you have to ask your local Earl if you have permission.
And he'll just slap you.
Just slap you, as is his right.
As is his right, as is his obligation. Right. And you know what? I had it coming.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about what's next?
We're at 2 hours.
Are we? No, we're not. Okay.
Briefly,
what's next? What's next for you?
I have ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure I should even talk about them because I've had the ideas in the back of my head for a while, and I have gone off with a couple of podcast tangents as we've been doing. What they didn't really last, but I think that's because that they were kind of news reactionary ones that I need to grab people in regularly on 2 week basis to do episodes. And that's hard. If you're not a professional journalist, news person.
That needs to be your full-time job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas what Donald referenced, and I had been thinking of it when he talked about like a one person talking into a mic, telling the story about something historical. That's my jam as well.
Yeah.
And no one has talked about the history of the Taoiseach office.
Ooh, that could be
so
good.
Maybe that. The only problem I have is that I can't think of a good name because the history of the Taoiseach is shit.
Ooh. Taoiseach and awe.
What does that mean?
Like shock and awe.
Oh, yes. No. I was going to say that's good, but no.
Spilling the Taoiseach.
That's not bad.
Spilling the tea.
The problem is that I may not want to put Taoiseach into the actual name. What about you?
I'm not going to do anything podcasty.
You're done.
I think I'm done. Maybe if I do something
hanging up the mic,
it'll be behind the scenes or something like that.
Producery side.
Like I think I'm not. I find it stressful. Like this is comfortable because it's you and it's two friends talking. But yeah, any of the promotion-y side, anything that touches on that, like I've been slowly weaning off social media, I've talked about it before and stuff. So any of that kind of very public facing thing, I think it's better for my mental health and me as a person. I've been kind of like not withdrawing into myself, but kind of consolidating and narrowing down things to be more about less about social media interactions and more about just like my core group of friends and less about like big output and more like just focused in on stuff. So I don't think I'm going to do any sort of podcastual stuff.
You can make a podcast for your friend group.
Maybe.
Podcast. You could start it as a thing.
But what I'm saying is I might fill the time with stuff like, you know, I love our D&D sessions. Maybe I'll run a D&D session or something like that.
Warhammer.
I've also volunteered.
It's cool now. Superman's on board.
What?
Henry Cavill.
Oh yeah. Well, that's obvious. He's a big fucking nerd, that dude. I've been talking to a charity in the UK to do some volunteering with. So I've chatted to them a few times, so I'm going to help them a few design things, some branding things, and then some also just like in person, like whatever help they need. But yeah, just like get doing more in person-y things, I think.
Well, sure. Look, I mean,
I say that now.
You tried it.
Bored and then,
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, if you don't end up doing it again, you tried it. You performed at the Electric Picnic. You did two Dublin podcast shows. You've had 140 episodes of a moderately successful podcast with listeners that we've genuinely touched. Yeah. So even though you're consolidating and talking about the, like, you know, the local level,
yeah,
you still did the internet.
Ah, yeah, we did it. Yeah. We gave it a go.
You did.
Tick that box.
Did it pretty good.
We did it. Yeah, we did do it, didn't we? I'm kind of stalling out because I don't know if I want this to end.
Oh.
I guess maybe a few shout outs and thank yous to people.
We've
touched on a few of them. Supermarket Love, again, thank you for the amazing music. All of our recurring guests, Donald, Peter, Jazz and Jimmy, we didn't mention them.
Of course, right as honorable.
Yeah, frequent collaborators. Lena Norms, Lex Kreacher was on a few of our episodes. Thank you to them. Friends and family.
Of course.
Couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah.
You know, supporters came out to our live shows, all that stuff. Our parents. I know Mammy and Daddy Nolan are responsible for a good percentage of our downloads just because they just keep downloading old episodes over and over again to listen to when I'm away. Our girlfriends.
Yes.
Anya and Kate.
Amazing supporters.
Kind of dominate them. Jer Carney. We already did a big diatribe on how much we love him. There from the beginning. Our first listener. Our best listener.
Keen.
Who's going to come over here for a pint after. And yeah, anyone, whoever, if you ever listened, if you ever downloaded, if you're listening now at the end of a fucking bumper 2 hour episode, we're going
well. We tried our best to not do this to you.
Yeah, but here
fuck
we go.
It.
Look, it's the last one.
We'll do it
Christ.
Now.
Christ.
Yeah.
And thank you, Steve. So I'm trying to get upset. So you know the way when you need to give like a dog medicine and you wrap it up in like a bacony treat?
Yeah.
You've been the doggy treat to my political medicine in the sense that I never would have done this with anyone else. I'm a better person for having done this. It's helped shape me for the positive over the last 5 years. And like, yeah, I literally can't think of a single person who I would have done this with. Not even. Yeah, I love him to bits, but it's not the same. I'm a idiot in a lot of ways and I need to, if I'm going to learn something like this, that's out of my comfort zone, I needed a comfortable space to feel silly and to be able to joke around things, and you fostered that and you helped create that perfect environment, and yeah, I wouldn't have done it without you, and I thank you for that, making me better.
Oh.
Well,
thank you so much, because this has been an outlet to something that I don't normally get to vent to talk about. And yeah, you gave me the space to be able to feel confident enough to talk about these things with, and make me think that I'm an expert.
I mean, you are.
I'm not.
But there's, okay. But like, I know, but like, there's like, you're not, you know, the BBC aren't going to give you a show, but what? You know, aww. you've thought a lot of the emails we get from people that like my favorite emails and messages are from the people that goes, yeah, like I'm now able to like chat in the pub with my friends about this stuff, which is exactly
what
I
was meant to be.
I didn't want to, like, this was never going to be like, oh, my stepping stone to a master's or whatever. It's like, no, I want to be able to be in a pub and just carry myself. But this is, you get messages to that effect. It's like, fuck, yes, that's like, we did it.
You gave me the outlet to know that that was the best way to do it, because I kept on trying to think about how I could do it in the way that was basically the BBC, but not.
Yeah.
Whereas this is what the niche was. This is where we found our sweet spot. And it worked very well.
We are sacks of meat powered by electricity and imagination, and this was us. This is two sacks of meat reaching out to whoever sacks of meat want to listen to us, and we're glad to have you sacks of meat along the way with us.
We will keep the Instagram and Twitter accounts open.
Yeah,
they will specifically say the show is no longer running, but please feel free to follow them.
Yeah,
I will keep my Twitter account open. Probably going to close my Instagram. I've kept that open.
Yeah.
But I'm going to close that.
Yeah. The Gmail will be there if you ever
Gmail
want to
will
say
be there.
Hi.
Probably won't check that.
Probably won't check that.
Yeah.
Bear with us.
Every couple of weeks, we'll check the Instagram and the Twitter. So if you do want to get in touch, obviously, immediately after this episode, we'll check it a good bit.
Oh, yeah.
Over the next while. And look, let us know what you guys are up to. If you guys start the next WADAM, tell us so we can fucking come and get you.
Yeah. That's ours. That's trademarked. You know what's going to be, what's making me really sad?
No.
Is that the world's premier, just like two white dudes chatting podcast is going to be gone now. And like,
No, Richie, no.
No, but like, I mean, who else is like what?
No, Richie, no.
What?
No, it's there. It continues. It
really?
It thrives.
The dream is alive.
You're joking, but I actually, one of the podcasts I've enjoyed the most is just that. the rest is history with the two British historians and shit. It is a good format. We gave it our all. We gave it what it was. We are who we are. Mm-hmm. We couldn't have done it any different way.
Well, that's it.
We are two white dudes shooting the shit. Yeah. Friends on microphones.
Yeah. And I think that's it. Wait. You know, I've just realized.
What?
What politics? I don't think that's grammatically correct.
What do you mean?
There's something about it. We need to look into this. But I feel like we might have fucked up.
Oh yeah, shit.
This is so embarrassing.
It's meant to be what's politics?
A, that and politics. We finally did it.
Richie knew politics.
You and politics. We and politics.